in the endgame now.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 119 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And I'm sure our listeners will forgive us if we get through the intro quite quickly this time round, because we want to get to the main review, don't
yeah.
we?
Big time.
We're going to start off the episode with our top three Asian movies. Now, there is a great big vista of so many great films out there, and I am excited to see what you guys have brought to the table.
Our rewatch this time is The World's End, the final instalment to the Cornetto trilogy.
And it'll be interesting to see what we think of that, because we've always been pretty hard on that film, especially me and you, Mark.
Yeah, so this is the chance to hopefully, will we love it, will we not?
And of course, our main review is the one. It is Avengers Endgame.
Oh my lord!
I can't wait.
We're going to be going to our final round of our pretty amazing game show, Flick Me Faster.
That sounds so degrading when you say it.
Sorry, which I hate.
Yes.
So Ben and Mark are going to team up, and what are they going to get? Find out.
This time around, we're going to be masturbating over the Farrelly brothers, which is a bit different for us.
It is. We don't do that many comedy directors.
Not really, no.
And there's a lot to choose from.
And then we'll wrap up the show with all the usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week, and we'll give away an absolute ton of prizes. Do you know what, guys?
What?
I think it's time.
Yeah.
Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's get started.
Konnichiwa and annyeonghaseyo.
Ooh.
Wow.
They are two ways to say hello in Asia.
Nice.
Which ties in very lovely with our top three Asian films topics. This is going to be a broad spectrum of films. Basically, if it was made in Asia, it counts. Let's get started on this topic, and I'm very, very excited to see what you guys have brought to the table. So, Mark, hit me.
Ring.
What, the film?
Are you just, yes. are you just being rude?
Bragging?
You're talking about your bumhole again.
The film Always. Ring, or Ringu, as some people would call it.
Nice.
Not the horrible remake at
no,
all,
never,
in
never,
any
never.
Means at all. This film was the first film that really terrified me growing up, and I bought it on CD-WOW, which we'll probably get a mention a few times today. But my God, this film was horrible. We all know what it's about. This reporter and her ex-husband are basically investigating a curse. They find this videotape, and it's rumoured that if you watch it after 7 days, you are going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Not very good. Nah. I wouldn't want that from Blockbuster Video, would it? You know what I mean?
You don't see That's it on an Amazon review.
No, that wouldn't be good. It reminded me of Candyman, that horrible fear factor of something coming out of the TV or something coming from behind, not in a dodgy way. And it's one of the most disturbing experiences I remember watching. I think I might have been on drugs when I watched it for the first time at uni.
Always.
Sleep druggy.
Back in the day, but it's just unsettling. And we all know the scene that's the one that stays with us, that has actually had a lot of parodies done since. But that moment that there's that horrible scene where the sound is just this clicking noise, which will never go away. Never go away for me. The TV's got this fuzzy effect, and we see this it's still now at this moment terrifies me. We see this body come out of the telly and start crawling out. That is how you do horror. Americans have not got anything on these guys when it comes to horror. We will probably discuss more horror shortly, but that image of it coming out the TV and walking towards you stuck with me for about 6 months. And I watch a lot of horror.
Yeah. It's because she moves unnaturally. She doesn't move the way a normal human would. Her body's kind of weird and jerky and kind of, distorted.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
Fun fact, that was all reversed.
Yeah. Ah.
Hence why it's so jagged. I remember watching this at uni too, and somebody gave me the DVD, and on the extras was the video that they talk about in the film. And I was too scared to watch it. I've never watched it since.
You was.
Good job you're still here, isn't
it? I know, can you imagine? There was some creepy long-haired lady coming out the TV and freezing me to death. I don't know.
That'd be one hell of a DVD extra, wouldn't it, if she actually came out the TV at you?
One star, Amazon review.
Oh, imagine this film in 3D.
Oh my lord.
But this was honestly one of the ones that got me into horror, like that side of horror. I always grew up watching stuff like Evil Dead and stuff, but this was a different one for me. And I was very... I couldn't be arsed back then. Like, I don't have to read subtitles. I can't be arsed. You know what it's like, especially on drugs, you don't have to read subtitles at all. But this is the game changer for me. And it led to watching a lot of horror. And it's fantastic. I'll talk about more as it goes on, but there's going to be more.
Yeah. Do you know, I must admit, I've never seen the whole Japanese version. I've seen the American remake. Ugh. And obviously I've seen the famous bits from the Japanese one. I need to go and watch the whole thing, really.
It's fantastic. It's a wonderful lesson in tension.
I reckon once you watch it, you'll honestly just start watching all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a couple of them, isn't there?
So many good ones, yeah.
Ben?
I've cheated a bit here, I must say.
Oh! He's doing Blade Runner. No. There's writing, there's Japanese writing on some of the flags.
It's good cheating. It's cheating in a good way. I've purposefully not included Old Boy or Battle Royale.
Yeah, now
you guys might have them in your list, and that's great. That gives me a reason to talk about them. But I've talked about them to death, so I purposely not picked them. I've also stuck to live action films.
Yes, me too.
Because we've covered Studio Ghibli films and Akira and Ghost in the Shell to death.
We're on the same page.
We're on the same page.
Good,
that's
good.
So I'm going to start with a 2011 film called The Raid.
Yes, come on.
I've got it too.
Yes. So as everyone should know, if you've seen it, the film follows an elite police squad as they infiltrate an apartment building in Jakarta in Indonesia to take down the drug lord who runs the place. And despite the fact that it's an Indonesian film starring Indonesian actors and in the Indonesian language, it was written and directed by Welshman Gareth Evans.
Yes, it was.
He was filming a documentary in Indonesia and he became fascinated with the country and especially the Pencak Silat martial art that the citizens practice. And it's the Pencak Silat that this film is known for, especially as demonstrated by Iko Uwais, who plays the lead character. He's a rookie cop taking part in the raid and kicking the living shit out of anyone who gets in his way.
Is that what's in IMDb?
Yeah. That really should be the tagline, because that's exactly what happens. And there's lots of gunplay at the start of the film. For the first maybe 20 minutes, half an hour, a lot of gun battles. But that's nowhere near as interesting as the martial arts that takes centre stage around a quarter of the way in. And the beauty of the film, and I won't say too much, Mark, I'll leave some stuff for you, but the beauty of the film is that it takes place in almost entirely within that apartment block. And that, combined with the handheld sort of shaky cam work, it gives a real claustrophobic feel, almost documentary-like at some points. And it adds a necessary realism to it, because the fight scenes are so crazy and outlandish. It needed to be grounded, and I think the claustrophobia in the camera work really does that.
It's absolutely mind-blowing. It's one of the best 90-minute films you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. It's adrenaline from start to finish. It's probably one of the best action films you're ever going to see, and also probably the best martial arts film of all time, in my opinion.
It's excellent,
it's unbelievable. Some of the scenes with the gun battles are more intense than the film Heat. I honestly believe that they're that good, and I do believe the hallway battles give Old Boy a run for its money.
Yeah,
it's
very true.
That good. I actually love it. I love the second one as well. It's not as good.
I haven't seen it.
I've not. I really like it.
It's still bloody ace, but some of the best action sequences I've ever seen. Literally, if you're going to watch this film, leave your brains at the door, switch off, and just enjoy it. Put your phone away and just sit there for one of the best rides of your life. It is that good.
It is, and the fight choreography is unbelievable. It's so fluid and easy to follow with no annoying cuts chopping up the action. The best example of this is the boss battle at the end where the two brothers are fighting Mad Dog in that room. That is so good.
Also, the heel to face turn as well. Because you think there's no way he's going to help him out, and bang!
That was going to be Big Show originally.
Was it really?
He was busy that week.
Oh, shame.
When you said Mad, what's his name?
Mad Dog.
I was thinking of Mad. Is it Mad Dog McGee? That game you used to play at the arcade. Remember that with the gun?
I can't say I'm familiar.
No.
Did you dream this?
It's amazing. Mad Dog McGee.
Are you on drugs now?
I'm still on right now.
You cheeky little scamp.
I do recommend watching the second one though, Ben. Yes. Honestly, it's decent. A lot of them usually like, here we go. It's a cash in, but it works.
Yeah, Hammer Girl and Baseball Bat Boy.
Yes. I will definitely check it out. I think this one is so well directed. It's really smart how you'll have these passages of intense action, but then it'll slow down and it'll ratchet up the tension and then boom, intense action again. It's really great stuff. And people talk about the directorial choice of filming it in this one location, this apartment block, but that was more of a financial choice than a creative choice, because they had such a little budget that to save money, it was best just to have it in one location.
Unbelievable.
And it's one of those things where, you know, the necessity of it gave us something great. And I love it.
It really feels like playing Streets of Rage or Streets of Rage 2.
Yeah, it does.
The elevator level.
Going up to the next level and on to the big boss. But this film is slick.
There we go. Slick is the word. And now I want to go and play some Mega Drive. Come on, that's your topic.
It is indeed. So I'm going to start off with one of my favourite Korean films of all time, Train to Busan.
Nice.
Possibly one of my favourite zombie films ever. And the whole story is an outbreak starts to get a little bit out of hand in South Korea. So passengers on a train heading over to Busan are forced to survive in and out of the carriage. And it's extraordinary because, for me, it switches the zombie genre by giving survivors very little chance of getting out alive by putting them in such a claustrophobic atmosphere. How do you get out of a train when it's moving?
Mm-hmm.
No, seriously, I'm asking. How do you get out of a train?
Not well.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not safely.
No.
Thank you for the answer. And the zombies themselves are so frantic and frenzied once they turn, because with 28 days later, there was a little bit of time before they slowly merged into what they were about to become. But for this, it's instantaneous. They're unrelentless. They don't care what gender you are, what age you are too. They will scoff up the young ones and the very old ones. They will mess you up. And even a subplot involving Sokwoo and his daughter Suan provides a bit of a heart-wrenching tale on it all as well. They're slowly trying to bring back their bonding, their relationship, because they're so far apart. But by the end, oh, gets me in the heart every time. Mm-hmm. It's very, very sad. But we also have one of the most badass characters ever to grace Asian cinema, Sang-hwa, played by Dong Seok-ma. And this guy's life is all about his wife and his unborn child. And he will do anything he can to make sure that they're okay. But he's also so cool. He's such a badass. He wants to do everything he can to ensure that their survival is tantamount to the first degree. But I can't recommend this film enough, because it really is. You talk about The Raid being a roller coaster ride. Man, if that is Oblivion, this bad boy is Nemesis.
Nice.
It is so, so good. And of course, at the beginning of the year, I had a skip to the recommend for Soul Station, which was the prequel to this film, which was a cartoon. But it's brilliant. One of my faves.
I need to check it out. I've never seen it.
It's on Amazon Prime,
mm-hmm.
as is Soul Station.
I've seen it once. I loved it. I thought it was very well done, but I've not seen the prequel series yet that you raved about.
Oh, mm-hmm. It's fantastic. There's a tiny little nod to Train to Busan in there, obviously, because there's a zombie outbreak. You know, that's going to be it. But it is worth the recommendation.
I loved how big it got as well. Everyone was talking about it. I saw it on... Everyone was recommending it on our own episodes.
Yes.
But it was just great to see how many people were jumping on board and then going, oh, I want to check some more stuff out, because most people are ignorant. Mm. But, you know what I mean? So ignorant. But yeah, it's true.
It is one of those films that people were talking about. And when I heard the title, I assumed it was going to be some, you know, Oscar bait, heart-wrenching thriller about someone dying with cancer or something like that.
From up on Poppy Hill.
Yeah, I didn't realise it was going to be a zombie film.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
They don't pull any punches, do they?
It's very, very
good.
They
go right for the jugular.
Have we ever done our top three zombie films?
Never, but right. I am up for that.
That would be a good... Ben Woodward.
Bear in mind, I've seen like one.
Zombieland again. Yeah. You skip me out now.
Sorry, mate.
Back to you, Ben.
Shame. Well, I'm going to Japan for my second choice. It's 2001's Ichi the Killer.
Yes! Oh,
great film.
It is Takashi Miike's twisted and gory crime thriller, pitting sadistic, sexually repressed hitman Ichi against masochistic Yakuza enforcer Kakihara. The film is famous for its violence and gore. It's one of the most unflinching films I've ever seen, and it's not for people with weak stomachs. The film is absolutely grotesque at times. So I'll take you right back to the start of the film, for example. Ichi is being a peeping Tom through a window, and he's having a wank.
What is he like?
This is the opening scene. He then jizzes over a plant. The camera then closes up on his jizz, and then the title, Ichi the Killer, comes up through the jizz.
Literally comes up.
See what I did there? Through the jizz. So you know what kind of film you're getting from the opening scene, but there's so much striking imagery in the film. Like Kakihara, when he's interrogating this mob boss, and he's got him suspended from the roof on meat hooks, which are pierced through all the points of his back. It's absolutely disgusting. Or there's another bit where Kakihara is showing penance for something that he did wrong, so he cuts off the tip of his own tongue. And the camera doesn't cut away. You see the blade go through the flesh.
It's horrible.
It's absolutely grim. There's just so many things. In the film, like you've seen it, there are just so many things like that, aren't there?
One of my favourite scenes ever is when a guy gets split in half.
Yeah.
Was it from his foot? I think he kicks him with an ice skate or something.
No, it's because Ichi's weapon, he has a blade that comes out the back of his foot. Yeah.
It literally slices him from head to toe. And you think it would look stupid and cheesy.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. It's really hard to watch, actually.
It sounds like a Mortal Kombat fatality.
It kind of is. Yeah, wow. It's not a date movie.
No.
Oh, shame.
No, not so much. Although the film is ostensibly about Ichi, because his name's in the title, it's really Kakihara who steals the show. He's got this bleach blonde hair, and he wears this tartan suit, so he looks like a member of the Bay City Rollers.
Amazing.
And he's got this Chelsea smile, meaning his face has been gashed. Both sides of his mouth have been split open. and it keeps them closed with piercings. And there's this one bit where he takes the piercings out and a guy goes to punch him and he can open his mouth so wide because of the Chelsea smile that he swallows the guy's fist and then gnaws the skin off his fingers.
Can we watch this immediately? I want to watch it.
And it's not comical. So you're sitting there thinking, that sounds silly. It'll be like, aha, it's not. You're literally sitting there going, this looks too real.
Yeah. So nothing like Team America.
Not so much. Not at all. It's pretty vile. But Kakihara is such a unique creation. Because of the extreme nature of this film, when it debuted at the Toronto International Film Festival, they actually gave out sick bags to people. Now, that was more of a publicity stunt than anything else, but apparently a lot of people ended up using them.
What?
Because it is really, really grim. And the film was, and possibly still is, banned in several countries, including Norway, Malaysia, and Germany, because it's just so... I mean, it must be if the Germans won't watch it.
I was about to say, that this is from the home of Funny Games.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a great damn film. The Yakuza enforcer, Kakihara, he's played by a guy called Tadanobu Asano, who's more famous in the Western world for playing Hogan in the Thor movies. He was one of the Warriors Three.
No way!
Yeah. It's a shame that he's basically doing those kind of roles, thankless roles where he gets murdered and, you know, not doing cool shit like this anymore.
I wanted to pick what Ben's been talking about, but have you heard some of the names he's been coming out with and some of the pronunciations?
We'd still be here and it'd be 10 minutes later.
That's why I was so chuffed with Raid, the director, Gareth. You know what I mean? That's the only reason I went for it. Some of those names he's just come out with. Nah, I'll offend half our listeners.
Ichi the Killer has been a film that I've always wanted to watch and I've heard so many good things about it, but it just escaped me.
Yeah, Takashi Miike, he's one of the biggest names in Japanese cinema. Mm. He's done so much weird shit like Audition, and you know, maybe that'll come up on one of your lists in a minute.
Yeah. Who knows?
He does all kind of weird shit, and he's a great director.
Definitely.
Well, for my next choice, I'm still going to stick to South Korea. I've gone for The Handmaiden.
Ooh. I've not seen this.
Me neither.
It is currently on Amazon Prime. It's directed by Chan-wook Park, who's responsible for the big hits Old Boy, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, and Lady Vengeance, all three spectacular films. And it's a story about love, lust, and betrayal that takes place in 1930s Japanese occupied Korea. And it's about a young village girl who is tasked to be a handmaiden to a Japanese heiress. But she also has a bit of a hidden agenda to swindle her because she's a bit loaded with the old bunts, if you know what I mean. So it seems straightforward. However, the player becomes the played, relationships become developed, and there's a little bit of lady-on-lady action. Hey,
bonus.
Fellas!
Sign me up.
But aside from that, everything about this film is absolutely flawless. The cinematography is absolutely breathtaking. The performances from both actresses, too, are well worth anything that you've ever seen in a westernized film. It's a rewarding slow burner of a film, so it's roughly about 2 hours 45 minutes, so it's a long old film. Mm-hmm. However, judging from Chan-wook Park's previous films from Old Boy and Lady Vengeance, it is worth the payoff at the end. The clues are always there in a story, so this instantly has a rewatch factor to it, and we only notice it on the second watch. But the whole film is just mastered beautifully. It's a work of art, a work of living, breathing film art.
Do you know, I think this one bypassed me entirely. I don't think I'm even aware of this film.
I know a few years ago, Secret Cinema did it as an event too, and everybody was completely silent. So, I mean, things like that don't happen every now and again. I mean, bloody hell, we watched A Quiet Place and there were still people like jabbering on in the back. But it is an exquisite film, and it's a film that needs your undivided attention.
Yeah, it'll be no good for Mark then.
No, I mean, also,
I switched off already.
Also, 2.5 hours. No, you'd never make out. You'd never make out alive.
So is it anything to do with the TV series?
I knew he was going to do that. I knew it.
You know what? You knew it and you didn't stop it either.
Sorry. It's not my job to police him.
Someone's got to.
It's a full-time fucking job.
Yeah.
If anyone out there is listening.
I can't really comment, but it's one of those ones that is getting great reviews, have to watch it. But there's so much more ahead of that, like Tremors 4 and Lost Boys 5. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You've not seen Lost Boys 5 yet?
Who are you?
There's a director's cut now.
Jesus.
So you get a lot more Corey.
You're dead to me.
My next choice is no surprise, and it follows on very nicely from Ben's. It is Audition, so well done.
So is mine.
Brilliant.
Lovely.
This film is about a widower that screens girls at a fake movie audition for a film that's never going to happen.
What a dreamboat.
That's the way. Don't forget cooking nice meals or going to bars. Set up a production company. Go for a whole new, you know, way of securing a new wife by building a fake movie set for a fake movie. Ridiculous. But this film changes in tone. In the likes of sort of Dusk Till Dawn, it's absolutely insane. It's horror at its best because it's all about the anticipation. It's not about this big monster versus evil and all this. It's a build-up and there's something lurking around the corner. And for me, that's when it's the best. My God. I actually don't want to spoil it because there's a lot of people out there that literally take on board what we're saying. I don't want to say the bit that changes everything. Yeah. But there's this phone call scene that changes everything. And at that point, you are literally mind blown. About 45 minutes in. And at that point, I think the film changes tone and it becomes like a David Lynch film. It is so messed up and some of the most violent, hardest scenes. Ben was talking about Ichi the Killer being difficult to watch. This is probably the next level. Yeah. He's like, hold my beer. And there's one scene, and Gemma, I'll pass it to you shortly, but there's one scene in that film where I haven't been able to look at a piano in the same way since. Mm-hmm. It is so fucking hard to watch, and some of the most intense, gory violence you'll ever see. And the Americans have not got shit on any of this. You think some of those films are gory and horrible? This is the trademark to go, this is how you do it.
This seems to be your thesis statement for this whole thing, that the Americans ain't got shit on this. It's twice you've said it.
Come on, USA, you're drunk.
I can't say that during Endgame, so I'll do it now. God damn, this film.
Asami, when you first meet her, she's so fragile and she's so shy and so closeted off. She's just this delicate flower that comes into the widower's life. But you're absolutely right. Everything is just a veneer. You don't know what on earth is underneath the layers of this woman. And she's a monster. But at the same time, you kind of feel a bit of sympathy for her because she's a product of abuse. She's a product of perversion. Mm-hmm. And you can understand why she's gone the direction that she's had. But she may have been a little bit wrapped up in just knowing that violence is the answer, that revenge is what she lives for. But bloody hell, I remember holding my breath for the last 20 minutes when I first watched this. Even when I first watched this, I had no idea that this was a horror film. I thought this was just, you know, a fun, quirky Japanese love story between two people who shouldn't be together, but they are.
Yeah.
They should never have been together. No. Bloody hell.
No, and this is, if we thought the previous films we talked about, this is not a date movie in any way, shape or form.
I wouldn't even class it as a breakup movie because I'm sure you'd probably get life.
Yeah.
It would be kind of funny to take a date to it though, wouldn't it? don't let them know what's going on.
This is the sort of stuff I like in the bedroom. You've seen it, right, Ben?
I have seen it, yeah.
You love it?
I do love it, and I think your comparison from Dusk Till Dawn is apt, because it is one of those things where it just changes 180. You do not see it coming. It's that delayed payoff that makes it all the worthwhile.
Did you know that the actress that played Asami was a method actress?
What?
She was sitting around with syringes and people. And
but there is a scene where, how to put it, puke is involved.
Yes. Mm.
That ain't prop puke.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Yep.
I don't think I can watch that again now, knowing that. It's a tough watch, though.
Oh, it's harrowing. Harrowing.
And I know that listeners do go, oh, I'm going to go and check that out. Don't blame us. I'm not saying this is a nice film to go and watch. It will fuck you up.
We warned you.
But it's worth it. And that's why I'm glad we haven't actually said the twist, because there's a big bit.
I agree.
Come on, it's Ben's final go, and that's it then, isn't it? We're all done.
I'm going to finish it off by visiting Hong Kong for 2002's Infernal Affairs.
Superb choice.
Masterpiece.
So it's a crime thriller about a cop who infiltrates the triad and a triad member who infiltrates the police force. And if that seems familiar to you, it's because it's the film that Martin Scorsese's The Departed was based on. And amazingly, I only learnt this the other day, Infernal Affairs, the inspiration for it was Face Off.
Wow.
For real, the director Andrew Lau, he really liked Face Off and he wanted to create a more realistic scenario, but with characters effectively swapping identities rather than swapping faces. So it's absolutely mad to me to think that Scorsese won his first Oscar for a film indirectly based on a batshit crazy Nicolas Cage face swapping movie. Yeah.
And now all is right with the world.
Yeah.
And I'd argue that The Departed is a better film. I know other people will argue the opposite way, and that's absolutely fine. But there are elements of Infernal Affairs that I think work better. Infernal Affairs, it works harder to explore the psychological toll that the dual lives have on the two main characters. This is especially true of Ming, which is the character played by Andy Lau in the film and the equivalent of Matt Damon's character in The Departed, Sullivan. In Infernal Affairs, Ming, he begins to question his role as a spy in the police force. He begins to think, am I doing the wrong thing? Could I genuinely be a good guy? Whereas in The Departed, Sullivan is essentially an unrepentant prick all the way through. So I like the fact that Infernal Affairs tries to get more into their mindset and into the psychology of it all. And also, Infernal Affairs has two female love interests. For each of the two male characters, they have a separate love interest. But whereas in The Departed, they combine them together into one character played by Vera Farmiga. And while she is absolutely brilliant in the film, I think it stretches credibility a little bit that she would be involved with both of those dudes. It's one of the things that never quite rang true to me in that film, whereas they didn't do that in Infernal Affairs.
Such a player.
Infernal Affairs, it's a very much a classic Hong Kong cop thriller with very little backstory, unlike The Departed, and it has a much faster paced plot. Departed is more languid to begin with and spends more time fleshing out the characters, which Infernal Affairs isn't really interested in, and they can do that a bit later on because they were sequels to it. But I think that's what makes it stand out compared to The Departed, the fact that it's willing to just go for it. It's full force, all guns going, you know.
Yeah, it's a very fast film, isn't mm-hmm. it? It doesn't rely on the slow burn, and even the editing techniques is very frantic. I watched this as part of research too,
yeah,
and I forgot how much I love this film. It is so, so cool. I think I have to admit, I do prefer The Departed over Infernal mm-hmm. Affairs, but I can understand why this is such a Hong Kong masterpiece in terms of cinema. It's incredible.
What was the other part of the trilogy then? What they called the second and third part of this?
Infernal Affairs 2, Infernal Affairs 3.
Aren't they not called something else?
No.
Oh, okay. So I've never seen the whole trilogy.
Right.
And everyone says it's a perfect trilogy mm-hmm. where most films don't do it. So I need to check out the other two.
Yeah.
The first one is absolutely flawless. Mm-hmm. I prefer it, I think, to The Departed.
Do you?
I saw it first. I used to love it. Okay. I watched it at uni. Yeah. Me and Boov used to watch it all the time.
Oh, wow.
Bought it, and it cost loads of money at the time. It was like 25 quid back then for a Region 3 DVD, and it blew my mind. But The Departed I've only seen a couple of times, and I find it, a bit too long.
It is long,
yeah.
That
yeah.
is true. But I think you've hit onto something there, which is what I was about to say anyway, that I think it's down to which one you saw first,
yeah.
as to which one you prefer.
Yeah.
So I, like Gemma, saw The Departed first and prefer that one.
And it's your boy Leo.
It's my boy Leo. You know what I mean? And my boy Marty.
Yeah, it's a great cast.
It's a great cast, great director.
Have we never done that as a rewatch?
Never.
What
we
not?
The hell?
No, we should do them both.
We've not done that
yeah.
many
That's
Scorsese.
What we should do.
We've not done that many Scorsese films.
That's true.
Yeah.
I don't think we've even done one.
They'll be on the list soon.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
definitely.
Oh,
some really good ones. I knew we'd have a bit of crossover, but I didn't think there'd be that much.
Yeah.
But it was nice. A nice mixed variety.
Hey, well, talking about mixed variety, social media came Ooh. Up as well. They delivered.
It was our most popular ever topic on social media.
Is that right?
It is.
Yeah.
I didn't do any like analytics or anything. I can't tell you which one came up the most. But it was the most response ever.
Yeah, there was a lot. And also this means that I've got a bit of homework to do after this episode. So
yes.
thank you for your recommendations. Firstly, to Twitter, MC Myers at Film Objective said Battle Royale, the most popular one.
I wanted to bring it, even though we talked about it, just because it's that good.
It's in my top five films of all time, so it would genuinely be in my top three Asian
and
films.
Our rewatch is very good of that.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I will say.
So he came up with that. He also came up with The Host.
That's a great mm-hmm. film.
And a very recent film, The Wailing.
I don't know.
Not seen that.
Currently on Netflix. It is on my list. I've yet to watch it, but I'm very excited about
cool.
it.
Cool.
Promo Perk at Promo Perk said Dream Home, Dumplings, and Hansel and Gretel. And it's not Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. There is an Asian film called Hansel and Gretel.
Not seen any of them.
No, there's some deep cuts.
Yes. Mm,
absolutely. Michael Riccardi at MAR1962 said The Handmaiden. Hard Boiled.
That's a brilliant mm-hmm. film, yeah.
And Shoplifters. Excellent.
Not seen that either.
Very recent too. I think it was nominated for Best Foreign Film at the Oscars, but that is an exquisite film too.
Lovely.
Definitely recommend that. Mark Deitch at Mark Deitch 1. Mark Deitch. At Mark Deitch 1, one of the two. Never mind. The Night Comes for Us, Train to Busan, and The Villainess.
The Night Comes for Us, the Netflix exclusive, that is a film.
Is it?
It's supposed to be getting absolutely awesome reviews. Like, they're saying it's one of the best films in the last 5 years.
Wow.
I'm on to that. And Mark, apologies for getting your name wrong. Facebook, we got John Mooley said Audition.
Yep.
Save the Green Planet.
Never seen
and
that.
A Tale of Two Sisters.
That is
Shudders.
Absolutely terrifying. Probably the scariest film I've ever seen in my entire life.
Wow, big words.
It is
deep.
More than Troll 2.
What?
No.
Yes.
Bullshit.
Say what?
Yes.
Bullshit.
This liar over here, what's he like? Then we have Chris Wall that said Versus, A Bittersweet Life, and The Raid 2.
Ooh. Prefers it to the first.
Versus
I know.
Is a great film.
It is. Natasha Tazzy Pliskin said 13 Assassins, Hero, I'm a Cyborg, but That's Okay.
Nice.
Hero's a good film.
It is.
Yeah. Mm.
I'm surprised none of us had Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
I know, I know.
Or
House of Flying Daggers.
That's great.
It's a great film.
Really,
yeah.
really
But then
good.
Again, though, this is the strength of Asian cinema.
It
there is.
Is
so mm-hmm. much good stuff. And then finally over to Instagram, Lee Strudwick at Mr. Strudwick said, The Raid, Ringu, and Infernal Affairs.
Lovely stuff.
He's basically covered us all.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. Yeah, with choices.
Yes.
Spunk.
There we go.
Gemma.
And
what?
Made his name come up from the Spurs. Yeah.
Lee Strudwick.
Oh, God.
So thank you very much, guys. And as always, keep them coming in.
Whose topic choice is it next?
That would be me. It is time to enter the realm of magic and myth, of wizards and warriors, of demons and dragons. It's time to discuss our top three fantasy movies.
Yes!
Ooh, fantasy.
This is it. The 22nd movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the culmination of an 11-year story started in Iron Man back in 2008. This is Avengers Endgame.
I think I'm going to be sick.
So in Endgame, the world is reeling from the events of Infinity War, where the mad Titan Thanos snapped his fingers and wiped out half of all life across the universe. The remaining Avengers, including Iron Man, Black Widow, Captain America, Thor and Hulk, have spent some time grieving and trying to heal from the devastation. But the arrival of Ant-Man in Captain Marvel provides renewed hope that everything can be fixed and that Thanos can finally be defeated. Now, there will, of course, be spoilers.
Yes.
We are going to be discussing all the key events of this film. If you have not yet seen the film and do not wish to be spoiled, skip to the end of this particular segment and then come back later once you've seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gemma, I'm going to throw it out to you first.
Oh, God.
Endgame or Endlame?
Where Infinity War was all about the fight, this is about reflectance and grief. And it could derail expectations on first glance. But oh my, a fitting and emotional and heart-wrenching farewell to the Avengers. And I loved every single second of this three-hour film. Bravo, Marvel, and thank you so much for 11 years worth of amazing film.
Well, it sounds like Gemma liked it.
Kind of, you know, a little bit.
So, Mark, Endgame or Endshame?
I loved it. 3,000.
Oh my God, well done.
This was a cinema experience like no other. Like Gemma said, after 10 years and 22 films, it was no easy task for the Russo brothers at all to give us the final closure to it all. They did it and more. I fucking loved it. And thank you, Marvel, for this experience.
Well, unsurprisingly, we're all on the same page.
Oh, yes!
It is the perfect capper to this sprawling cinematic universe that pays off so many plot points from across the MCU, and it sets up the future of the universe as well. It's sad, it's funny, it's heartbreaking, it's uplifting. In a word, incredible.
Oh my God.
Should we score it and just piss off all our listeners?
Yeah, fuck them. I genuinely don't know where to begin, really. I suppose, shall we start with the start?
Yeah.
The opening half an hour of the film is like being repeatedly kicked in the balls,
yeah,
but in a good way.
Or,
yes.
or the
ovaries,
or the,
yes,
the lady balls.
The yes. lady balls.
The film doesn't rush into the action. I like how it allows us to experience the character's grief. So you've got those opening scenes, like the very opening scene, Hawkeye watching his family disappear.
Oh my God, that's a way to kick off a film, isn't it?
The pace to start was, I wasn't ready for it. I thought it'd be a big action scene. It was like Star Wars. And I was like, oh my God, here we go. Or we're just suddenly going to get into a battle. And I was like, this is taking a long time to brew.
Well, think about it. They didn't even start off with the traditional Marvel credits.
Yep.
They went straight into the sequence.
It's weird.
Yeah. So we had that. We had Hawkeye losing his family. So that was a kick in the gut. Then we go to space and we see Tony and Nebula. And Tony's literally withering away. The effects they used to make Robert Downey Jr. Look haggard were really impressive, weren't they?
Ridiculous. He looked like the kind of machinist weight loss. He had that kind of physique, and Gaunt. I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
He was a completely different person. You think of how we were introduced to him all that time ago to where he is now. The character development, it shocked me.
He's amazing.
He's absolutely, we'll cover how great he is. Yeah. And then when Captain Marvel comes to save him, again, to stick with the kind of somber feel of the opening of the film, it's not this big, amazing moment where the score kicks in.
Yeah. No.
It doesn't. She just appears slowly, like an angel.
Yes.
She's just this bright light. And then we focus through the light, and there she is. And it's just quiet, and then we cut back to Earth. There's no big grand...
It's insane.
It's so somber and so calm and so quiet. And then, of course, we're introduced to Thor, who is in...
He's in a
drunken depression. He's essentially got PTSD, hasn't he?
Yeah. But it's also the best tribute I've ever seen of the Big Lebowski.
Yeah, it's genius.
It was awesome. And it makes me feel better now for having a bit of a belly. I feel like, well, hang on, Thor's all right, and he still looks all right with one.
I haven't yet decided who my favourite character is in the film. I don't know if it's fat, drunken PTSD Thor, or if it's chilled out, cool guy Hulk.
Yeah.
it's such a weird one.
Yes.
What I love about this character... You think of when we first introduced to Hulk and he's got the rage inside of him and we had the cool exterior of Bruce Banner. As the film goes on, that kind of switches. We have the Hulk, especially in Thor Ragnarok, where he's mostly present in the film, and we've got Bruce Banner trapped into this kind of void. This is the only film where the two of those actually meet physically and mentally, and I love that little kick about it. But also, how good is Mark Ruffalo as Hulk?
He's very cool.
He's brilliant.
I've said it before, James Gunn said he's the best actor on the planet, and I'm always like, no, he isn't. But in this sort of films, you're like, actually, he's fucking awesome. Yeah, he's not the best ever. He's never going to win an Oscar.
He's been nominated, I think.
He has been
nominated.
But he's
nominated. Never going to win. Yeah. But he's awesome. And I just love that the CGI and everything look great. Because sometimes they can get
flawless.
It wrong. I was watching him thinking, this looks too good. Mm. Like, sometimes when you see some... Let's be honest, when you see Rocket Raccoon, he's amazingly done, but instantly he is an animation. In that, I was like, he is a real massive human in my head.
It's kind of the same with me with Thanos. Even though Thanos obviously looks more like an alien, it's because... You know, the way they do the motion capture these days, every little facial tick, every twitch of an eye or twitch of the side of a mouth is captured and then replicated, and that's what makes them look more realistic. It's absolutely
fantastic
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Hulk and Thor, you're right, Ruffalo is fantastic, but Hemsworth, man, I would say Hemsworth and Downey Jr., who we'll come to, are the MVPs of this film. Hemsworth... He does something really impressive. He manages to juggle tone so well. So sometimes he's playing the depression and devastation that Thor's feeling, and he does it so movingly, so well. But then he's also the most reliable source of laughs in the film. He's the funniest character, but also the one that makes your heart hurt the most. Mm-hmm. And it's just brilliant work from Hemsworth, who I think is a massively underrated actor.
He really is. And again, it kind of shows the development of what Thor's gone through after all of these years. He is still reliable, and we still see him as a fan favourite. And even Thor out of shape and not being this sort of big muscle guy that we're so used to seeing in the cinematic universe, you're still on his side. You still want to see him succeed.
I want to drink beer with him. He seems the cool.
Yes.
Him and who's the guys from Thor Ragnarok? Cool,
oh
playing
God.
On the PlayStation again. I was like, I'm so glad you're back.
Yes, was it Thor? He's calling me a dick.
call me a dickhead again.
And the thing that I really liked about it wasn't spoiled. So I hadn't seen any set pictures of this big overweight guy, this haggard one that's got his hair not washed. And that was a nice surprise, because usually idiots all over Twitter and Facebook and social media ruin it. I didn't know anything. I thought we were getting the full muscular badass Thor.
Yeah.
So the moment we saw him with his massive beer gut in a cardigan, I was literally like, isn't it nice to have something as a surprise in cinema now?
Yeah, absolutely, I agree, because there's a reviewer whose reviews I always read. He's a guy called David Edelstein, and he writes for Vulture.com, and he's a great reviewer, but I purposely avoided any reviews for this film just in case, and I'm glad I did, because I went and read his review today, and he gave away the whole fat, drunken Thor thing. I was like, he didn't, in his mind, that wasn't a spoiler. It's like, of course it was. It was a huge reveal that no one was expecting, and that's what made it funny.
I mean,
Thor is the god of thunder. He's not the god of donuts. We didn't expect that.
If it would be, it'd be Krispy Kreme donuts.
Always.
Definitely. Big time. Moving into the middle of the film then, so we've kind of got the beginning out of the way. The whole conceit of the heroes having to go back in time to visit moments from their past to retrieve the stones, I thought was a very clever idea. And one of the things I loved about that is that it brought a lot of surprise cameos from the likes of Tilda Swinton, we got to see again.
Yes.
Natalie Portman turned up and didn't even speak.
Didn't need to. Perfect.
And Robert Redford, who is one of the greatest names in acting history, has retired, but he was willing to pop up in the MCU one last time.
I think that's
huge, man.
Call it fan service again, and this is what I love about the whole film, but especially this middle part was a big love letter to the fans from Marvel, because it made us go, bloody hell, do you remember that happening in New York? Oh my god, they're back at Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. It was just a lovely warm hug, just seeing all of this, knowing that the time that you'd invested in these films was paying off. And it was just lovely to see how the heroes that we know now are revisiting their past selves. Captain versus Captain.
That was an amazing fight.
Oh my god. And also
unbelievable.
But again, that I think that if you're talking about the where the journey has been from start to end, I think Captain America Steve Rogers seeing his old self, that is probably the best example of that. Two completely different characters.
The moment we got this time travel stuff, it was like a greatest hits album.
It
and
was.
Just sitting there listening to your favourite tracks. But I thought, has Christopher Nolan got on board? Because this is not very Marvel-like. This is like, we've not seen anything like that before. Because this is like after about 45 minutes of the film. After half an hour, we see Thanos with his head chopped off. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
This is supposed to be the end of the film. What's going on? Have they got Christopher Nolan involved? Because that is very different for them.
Yeah, it was. It was very out the box thinking, I think, for them. And it had to be, because of it being the culmination of all these things. It couldn't just be the same old same old. One of the criticisms that get levelled against the Marvel films is they're kind of identikit. They're all basically the same or very similar. This feels like nothing else that has existed in the MCU before. Even revisiting the older films, it still felt new and fresh and like its own thing.
It also, you think about it too, it's kind of the right way of trying to undo all the bad stuff that happened in Infinity War. The story, not the film. The film is a masterpiece. Because we see them being tasked to recover all of the stones before Thanos grabs hold of them, which of course leads us to probably one of our biggest spoilers that we're about to reveal, the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
Black Widow and Hawkeye are tasked with recovering this. I did not see this conclusion happening at all. And this is why I am so glad that people have adhered to the rule of not spoiling this film, because here we go. Rest in peace, Black Widow.
Mm. I did not see that coming at all.
I didn't think she was going to die. And I think it sucks that she has, because I think she's a great character and a great actress. It's, for me, the one thing in the film that didn't really work. Her death, it just wasn't powerful enough.
I agree. Because
it was inevitable. When they went there, one of those two was going to die. And we all thought it was going to be Hawkeye, of course. But then it was her, and that's supposed to be the shock. And it is a shock. But it also didn't feel powerful enough, because we saw Gamora die at that same spot in the previous film. And that was a real kick in the arse. It was like, oh my God, what the hell's just happened? Mm. That was a real powerful death. This just didn't feel powerful to me. She fell off. You see her on the floor, a bit of blood around her head, and that's the end of her.
Yeah.
She's not involved in the final battle. It felt like a disservice to that character.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a disservice to Scarlett Johansson that she went out like a bitch.
I feel like, no, you're right. I feel like she should have had a bit more of a grander death. I think it was almost cheated, because they were both willing to sacrifice their own lives in order to retrieve the Soul Stone. But I think it should have been a little bit more grandiose. It should have been more heroic. It should have been more devastating.
Yeah, like Tony's death was, and we'll come to that in a minute.
What?
Sorry, did you not stay awake for it?
No. I went for a wee. I just didn't realise.
That was a massive, powerful, humongous death. And I understand that they couldn't try and do two of those in one film because you'd feel fatigued by the second one. The second one wouldn't be as powerful. So I do get the logic of it, but it just felt like they've undersold her.
Yeah, because she's an underrated character in the whole of the Avengers cast line.
But even when they return and like, where is she? Where is she? But where is she? That should be a gut punch. Mm-hmm. And yes, they had a bit of orchestral music and a bit of sad, like, oh, she's obviously not here. But they all just went, shame. Anyway, let's carry on. And it was like, what? It's like she's been in like about 10 films. You know, she's got to have her own film as well at some point. Well, you know.
Yeah, Tony basically gets a state funeral. Everyone in the history of the MCU is there, and no one gives a shit about her. But yeah, the fact that she's going to have a spin-off film, it's going to have to be a prequel, because I can't imagine they're going to bring her back from the dead.
No.
But I don't know if I can care and get invested in a film where the main character I know is already dead in that universe.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if I'll give a shit, to be honest.
Look what happened with Solo.
That was kind of different for me, because it was played by a different actor, so it felt like its own thing.
Okay.
This, we're going to be watching the same character played by the same actress, but we know in this grand sprawling universe, she's not going to have any future effect on it. So I'm like, why am I watching this film then?
Because Scarlett Johansson for an hour and a half in black leather.
True story.
Why do people watch Underworld 2 and 3?
Yeah, that's true,
Not for the dialogue.
No, you're right. And I imagine in the prequel they will have Hawkeye involved, because she and Hawkeye have been running buddies for years. And I've got to say, I thought Jeremy Renner was fantastic.
I loved him.
This is the best use of Hawkeye that they've finally done well by him. They've always treated him poorly, I think, and he's such a stone cold badass in this film.
I mean, who knew grief was the magic ingredient?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it was. He lashed out at the world. When you see him fighting a Japanese boss over in Japan, and Black Widow comes to collect him, and he's just so lawless. He has no disregard for his own personal safety. He's all about just serving vengeance to those who deserve it. Fantastic.
He also had the best haircut.
Oh
ever.
My God.
How cool did he look?
He looked gorgeous.
But it's true, like, he hasn't had that real good treatment like the rest. And we forgot about him in the last one. He wasn't in it.
Yeah.
Nope.
So for them to turn around and go, well, actually, you've got the limelight for a good half an hour of this film, it was like, now I can see the payoff. It was worth the wait in Infinity War for this. Because we got his moment.
I love it. Yeah.
But it was, wasn't it? You were like, yes, he deserved that. He deserved it.
5 house points.
Good on you, Jeremy. I love you.
Let's move on towards the end of the film. Let's talk about the finale. I didn't track it. I didn't count it. But I imagine the finale was sort of 3/4 of an hour to an hour long. The whole final battle.
Happy with that.
It was absolutely amazing. And I just want to talk about some of the specific moments from the finale. There were so many moments that made you want to shout fuck yeah or punch the air or just outright weep. Let's start with Cap. Let's start with Captain America wielding Thor's hammer.
Oh my God, the whole cinema.
Holy fuck.
The whole cinema literally cheered and gasped and was just like, oh my God.
I did jizz a little bit. But it was worth it.
It was worth it.
It was absolutely mind-blowing. And you heard everyone sing, like, literally everyone.
And not only does he grasp it, it's a really cool shot of him grasping Mjolnir, but when he does then the uppercut punch with it on Thanos, it looks so cool.
It's unbelievable.
And again, no spoilers. Nothing was even revealed. Nothing was hinted. No. However, if you think to the back of the end credits for Age of Ultron, when Cap decided to sort of try and hold the hammer, and it budged ever so slightly.
It wiggled a little bit, didn't it?
But now he's...
I wiggled a little bit.
Uh-huh. I know you did.
Unbelievable.
Dirty bit.
It was so good. I wanted to punch the air.
Yeah, I did. And the thing is, it was shot so brilliantly. The Russos got it just right, because you see Mjolnir lift in the air and fly through, and you think it's just Thor.
Yeah.
Thor's just called it to hit Thanos. And then when you see it land into Steve's hand, fuck me. That's just good stuff, man. That is just good stuff. And then let's move on to another great thing about it. All the resurrected heroes arriving en masse to take on Thanos' army.
When
Stephen Strange and the other sorcerers open up all those portals and we just see everyone. It's we see mental. Black Panther. And, oh, Lord.
Yeah.
It's not me being ignorant, but you kind of forget, because there's so many films, 22 films, you forget about some of these characters. So when you're seeing Doctor Strange again turn up and his mates and everyone and all the people from Black Panther, you're literally like, oh my God, then the Guardians of the Galaxy turn up, Batista's there and everyone. You're literally like, this is... Again, a greatest hits album, but the best of the greatest hits. I'm literally sat there going, who else is... Oh, my God!
I had no shame in this. This is probably the point when I started to cry. Yeah. I just had tears rolling down my face because it was, again, it was just saying to the fans, you know, look, this is the end. We're going to deliver you a fucking good end. Even Pepper Potts in her Iron Man outfit. She looked bad.
Spider-Man looked awesome.
Oh, my Lord. Ugh.
And the best bit is when they all arrive, when they all come through those portals, and then it cuts to Steve Rogers and he says, Avengers Assemble.
Oh,
fucking yes!
Yeah.
Oh, mop. Mop. Mop.
Dirty bird. Absolutely fantastic stuff. And then to pull up on what you just said there about Pepper Potts, I think my favourite moment of this whole finale scene is when Captain Marvel shows up and she's got the Infinity Gauntlet and she's got to try and get it to the time machine. And Peter Parker says to her, how are you going to get there? You know, how are you going to get through all those?
Yes!
And then all of the women of the MCU just descend. It's fucking brilliant, isn't it?
Again, another moment where I just went, yes, thank you, Jesus.
That is the moment I knew that Gemma would be gushing everywhere. I literally was soaking, because I just thought to myself, it's all these line of just girl power.
And it was just the best kind of service for all of them, because each and every single one of them deserved their own moment in the sun, and bloody hell when they're all together.
It's literally like the Spice Girls reunion.
Yeah.
Nothing like the Spice Girls reunion.
It's exactly like that, but when they all come together on stage.
But again, doesn't that say a lot about this whole battle sequence? Because it could have been... we've been hurt before by battle sequences. Mm-hmm. You know, Venom. You know, we've
every
had
single
Hellboy.
DC film.
Yeah, DC. But this whole battle sequence itself, there are so many moments where you go, oh my God, and then this happened. Oh, do you remember when this bit happened? Oh, this bit is amazing. And I love that. I love the whole thing about this whole fight sequence, because it could have gone one or two ways. It could have gone too busy, it could have been really bad CGI or not knowing where to pay attention to, but having these moments, oh my Lord.
You know, I could so kind good. Of keep track of what was happening
you
as
could.
Well, because
you could.
Usually there is too much DC, you're like, what the hell is happening? Even in the Suicide Squad, which was absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
There was too much going on, and there's five characters.
Or the underwater scene in Aquaman. What the fuck was happening? Who knows?
But in this one, you had, 50, 60 characters from Marvel? Probably 100, and then all the 100 baddies. But every single thing that happened, I was watching going, okay, so he's attacking him. I can see Spider-Man in the background. Iron Man's doing this. Yeah. You knew what was going on.
But also, even the characters that aren't as big as those characters. Valkyrie on her Pegasus.
Oh, she was amazing.
Oh, my awesome. God, you know? It just...
Everyone got their screen time they needed.
They got their moment in the sun. One of the criticisms I've seen in a couple of the reviews I've read since is that Captain Marvel didn't have a big enough role, that she was there at the start and then she turned up at the end. And I agree, but I think there are two reasons why she doesn't have a bigger role. One is because it's not really her story.
No.
The story belongs to the original Avengers, our big six. Yeah. It's about them. And two, a more logistical reason, is that she's too strong. She's the most powerful character in the whole universe now. If she'd have been there the whole way through, there wouldn't have been a film.
Exhibit A, when Thanos headbutts her, she just looks at him like a little bitch.
Also, we have just come off the back of a month ago watching a 2-hour film of her.
Exactly.
So we all know what she's all about.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I was quite surprised, actually,
by
the little use of her. I thought she was going to be the one that kills Thanos and all this, but I was like, okay, this is quite good. They've dealt it well. Like the Guardians, we hardly got any of the Guardians of the Galaxy. Why? Because they've got their own film later next year.
Exactly. This is not their story. No. It's the Avengers story.
But Rocket Raccoon was fucking hilarious in every scene.
Always.
And I absolutely love him. And I wish he was real, because I'll just hang out with him all the time.
Yeah, I love when he first sees Thor, and Thor grabs him up against his fat belly, and Rocket's like, oh, no!
He's amazing, isn't he?
So good.
CGI, but I love him.
He's
and you'd never
brilliant.
Think it's Bradley Cooper.
Never.
No, his voice work is great, isn't it? Let's go back to the final battle then, because the last part of the battle that we have to talk about is, of course, Tony Stark.
Lord, I'm not ready.
Tony Stark getting the Infinity Stones.
Oh, my Lord.
And then Thanos saying, I am inevitable. And then Tony Stark saying, I am Iron Man. Fuck yes.
Oh, my Lord. who knew that somebody that was a bit of a dick, a bit of a douchebag for 11 years could make you weep like a baby?
Yeah.
Because he really did. That whole sequence, obviously because the power was too great for him, so he sadly succumbed to his injuries. But that whole sequence where they're all around him, and that moment when they realise that Tony is no longer with us, and you couldn't hear a pin drop in a cinema. It was like the fans, us sitting in the seats, paying our respects to somebody who just saved the universe. And I cried so hard.
I didn't cry. Mm.
You're dead to me.
But the moment that light on his chest went out, I was God, he's my fucking hero for 11 years.
But think of it. He's, no pun intended, he's been the heart of the Avengers.
Yeah,
of course he has. The whole thing started with him. So it's perfectly appropriate that it ends with him. Yeah. It started with Tony in 2008, so it's perfectly fitting. He was absolutely amazing in this film. He nailed every emotional beat that he had to. In a true and just world, he'd be nominated for an Oscar for this, I would say. He's absolutely phenomenal. And one of the things that really helped with that is they've done a really efficient job of setting up the father-son dynamic between him and Peter Parker.
Yeah.
In only a few appearances, but you really believe that he was heartbroken that he couldn't save the kid. So to see them together at the end, I just thought it was so beautifully played, and it made Tony's death even harder to take.
Absolutely heartbreaking. And to see how he's become a father and finally settled down, and how good he is as a father.
Yeah.
It's like, he's gone from that playboy in the first film 11 years ago to literally a really good moralistic guy, and now he's dead.
But it's,
you know what I mean,
the other way down.
And now,
he is dead.
When he burnt out, I thought something's going to happen. Like maybe Captain Marvel will walk over and recharge him. Like, this can't be it. Something right now. Like this is too much.
Will I recharge like a phone or something?
Yeah, like, I've got a socket.
Little,
but I just couldn't believe it. And like you said, the way it was done, it was just silence, and the whole cinema was like. Again, we hadn't had it spoiled, which is so good. Yeah. Like now it's all everywhere you go on Facebook and Twitter now, people are posting pictures of him dying, just being
really?
Absolute
what dicks? I'm sorry.
Everywhere.
What absolute cocksuckers.
Some NFL footballer announced to his millions of followers on Twitter, "Oh, I'm so sad that Tony died." It's like, you fucking idiot.
Oh my God, no. I'm sorry, but there's no room for people like that.
It's the top. Everything you see on Facebook and Twitter now, advertising the film, the first comment is some dickhead posting a picture of it dying. Mm. I'm like, you just deserve to just die yourself. But
extreme, but yeah.
It's true. But how nice, because me and Ben on the way in were like, who do you think is going to die, dude? And I was like, I think it's going to be Cap. Like, I think so.
We said Cap and Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Oh, I said Nebula.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought Nebula, because I was thinking it can't be somebody that big. It would have to be somebody who is going to be willing to sacrifice themselves. And I thought Nebula had a really good arc throughout the whole.
She was great.
I tell you what, Karen Gillan is a massively underrated actress because she's working under layers and layers of makeup and prosthetics there. So she has to do most of the work with her voice. And she uses that quite deep, raspy voice to brilliant effect. She always sounds so damaged, mentally and physically damaged. Yeah. Plus her physicality is great. She walks with such a strut, and even the way she stands, she's just got such swagger. She's brilliant.
I love her.
I loved her. And the thing is, we're going to get her again.
Yay!
And we're going to get Gamora again.
We might
get them all again.
We might even get As Guardians of the Galaxy.
Dude, that tease at the end where Thor is on the ship with the rest of the Guardians, that has to be what we're going to see in Guardians 3. If we don't have the Asgardians of the Galaxy, Thor on the ship with Quill and all them, I'll be furious.
I'm down for this.
I really want to see it.
More Valkyrie, please.
More Valkyrie all the time.
Mm-hmm. I want it all.
Yeah. And I want it now.
And it looks like Gamora has buggered off somewhere. And it looks like they're going to be hunting for her in Guardians 3. That would be my assumption.
I think so. I'm here for it.
What do we think to what happened with Captain America at the end?
I thought it was really sweet.
It's getting a lot of criticism.
No. Yeah.
So people online, the only stuff I've seen so far is, oh, it's too much of a slow pace to get to the battle, and I don't know what's going on with all the time travel because I got a bit confused. That's what I'm reading a lot of.
And now
I'm getting a lot of people saying, oh, I hated the end. Why did he suddenly have to turn old? And it's like, it's the perfect payoff for him.
Yeah.
We've lost him. He's gone. Uh-huh. We have to accept that's another death in the film. He is not going to return as an 85-year-old man taking on the world. But isn't it just a nice little wrap-up for his story?
Yeah. I thought it was lovely.
I think from the perspective of, does the time travel logic make sense? Absolutely not. Because there's no way he could have gone back in time and just stayed in the house for 50 years, and so no one sees that Captain America's running around even though he's supposedly frozen in ice. So it doesn't make a lick of sense, but fuck that. It doesn't matter. Time travel stories never, ever make sense because it's a physical impossibility, so don't worry about that. In terms of storytelling, it works because it is the ending that Tony deserved. Going all the way back to the first Captain America, he has owed Peggy Carter a dance. She never got that dance because he went into the ice. He finally got his dance with Peggy and he got to live his life with her. It is the correct and the best and most perfect ending for Captain America.
Fuck yes!
And he looked great old. It was done old. So well.
Don't you think he looked like Clint Eastwood?
He did, but less racist.
I'm sorry, but...
Clint's not a racist.
He is a bit.
You're thinking of his character from Gran Torino.
Oh, was that actually a film? That was a documentary on his life.
Chris Evans.
Yeah.
My personal MVP throughout the film.
Wonderful. Yeah. Absolutely wonderful.
And I just thought that whole end sequence when he decided that he was going to spend the rest of his life with Peggy, I really dug the fact that he gave his shield to Falcon. Yeah. I really, really like
that.
That's
a great handover.
I'm super excited. And of course, we've got phase 4 coming very, very soon. Bring on Falcon. Bring on the new Cap. I bow to thee.
I'm fascinated to see what the next phase of this is all going to look like.
Where's it going to go?
Yeah, I mean, Disney has these kind of yearly expos, don't they, where they reveal all their upcoming projects. I imagine whenever the next one of those is, I imagine we'll then find out what the next phase of the MCU is going to be, but I cannot wait to find out.
I'm so pumped.
But, you know, just to kind of wrap up this film, it's a highly emotional film, but it never feels emotionally manipulative.
No.
It always feels like, in fact, it doesn't feel like, I know that all the emotions are earned, not just across this film, but across Infinity War and the previous 20 films. We've watched these characters at their best and at their worst. We've seen them win, we've seen them lose. And at this point, we care deeply about them. And the film uses our connection with them to great effect to make all those emotions truly earned. It's a brilliant, brilliant film.
Yeah, this is flawless. It's the ending that they deserve. It's the ending that we deserve. It's the ending that really does show that they love us just as much as we love them. I'm completely floored still, but yet again, I cannot wait to see this film again.
I just want it to come out on Blu-ray so I can sit there and watch this and Infinity War at home on a Sunday and just sit in my pants and just watch it and just love it for a five-hour epic.
I've seen it twice now. I went to see it with Mark on opening night, and then the day after I just went on my tard after work because I just had to see it again.
I went to the midnight viewing, so I watched Infinity War first, then we had a half-hour break, and then we, of course, stuck into Endgame. And, oh my, thank you so much, Marvel, just... Thank you.
I think it's time to score it then, guys, isn't it?
Well,
let's see. Gemma, I'm going to go to you first.
It's perfect. I feel like I might be overreacting by giving it the perfect score. So therefore, I want to watch it again and then I might up the score. Mm-hmm. So it is a extremely and ridiculously high 9 out of 10. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Marvel.
Mark?
You probably expect me to go 10.
Mm-hmm.
I actually prefer Infinity War.
Ooh.
So it's a 9.
Okay. I'm not judging this as a standalone film. I don't really think you can. I'm judging it as a capper to an epic saga. And in that respect, I think it's the best possible version of itself. I think it does everything it needs to do exquisitely. So for that reason, I'm giving it 10 out of 10.
Whoa!
Whoa! This has never happened!
That's insane!
That's never happened!
I don't think I've ever given a new release
10
out of
10. You've always said you would never do it.
Passengers, I think you might have.
Fuck!
Not 0.10 out of 10, I think that was.
Wow.
So there you go. So overall, Avengers Endgame gets a skip to the end, 9 out of 10.
So tell me more. About what? Crown and Glory, is it nutty? Is it foamy? Is it hoppy? Does it have a surprisingly fruity note which lingers on the tongue?
Spear.
We'll have 5 of those, please.
It's competition time, everybody out there.
Put some graft in, mate. That was weak sauce.
That was a big one.
That was a weak lemon drink.
That was a big one.
Must try harder.
We've had a big review, a big topic. We need to have a breather.
You sound exhausted, mate.
B-.
It's a long one.
Yeah.
Oh, must
That's
be
been
better.
Kind.
Next episode will be the biggest ever, all right? There's your promise. Mm-hmm. Stick around for that. If you listened to our review on the last episode for Hellboy, that big pile of wank, that's the best way to sum
it
up.
Yeah, it's true.
I listened back to our review and we were too kind. But we did have some amazing Funko Pops from the original Hellboy.
Yes.
Rightfully the good
so.
Hellboy.
Rightfully so.
And in that pack we had Hellboy, we had Abe and we had Liz, so a free pack. And all we said was, who directed the original Hellboy? So Ben?
Guillermo del Toro.
Frank Matthews got that right on email, and he'll be getting those in the post very shortly. Next up, no relevance at all, but we just wanted an excuse to give them away. We had some Office Space Funko Pops, which are awesome.
Yeah.
Yeehaw.
Really, really cool. Them smashing up the computer and photocopier. Really, really cool. The question we put out there was, who plays Milton in Office Space?
Stephen Root.
It's true. And Felicity Barrymore's getting those. I wonder if she's related to Michael Barrymore.
I wonder.
Probably true.
You probably wouldn't admit it, would you, if you were?
No.
Find out one day. I don't know. Top, middle or bottom. Do you remember that show, Strike It Rich?
Yeah.
Pretty good. Was it Strike It Lucky, I think
it was both.
Yeah.
It was Strike It Lucky. Then it was
changed the name.
Yeah. He didn't Strike It Lucky.
God, way to hit our target audience, eh?
Because of our movie masturbate over Fincher, which was very good, we had a Fight Club t-shirt, which was very, very cool indeed. And we said, what song plays at the end of the film Fight Club?
Where Is My Mind?
It's Very True by the good old Pixies. I love that song.
Great
song. Very good.
Awesome.
And at the S Morgan, we'll be getting that in the post. The next one was for a Skip to the End bundle, which was from Last Exit. They included a Blade Runner Nexus wristband pack, which is very good for Ben's favourite film. For mine, for Jaws, they had an Amity police mug, which was very smart. And for Gemma, some Shining drink coasters for The Shining.
It's the only appropriate item.
And they're going to stick it all together and put it in a Fight Club tote bag. This is a question where compers couldn't just enter willy-nilly.
Willy-nilly.
So what we said was, where do we get the name Skip to the End from? So Gemma?
Spaced!
It's true. And Mike, which is at Ventman35, said, please can I win the Skip to the End bundle? It's the phrase used by Simon Pegg in the series Spaced. Also, I went all the way to Universal Studios in 2004 and the ride for Jaws was broken that day, so I couldn't go.
Got
so
it.
I think that's a nice little reason for him.
Devastation.
So that will make up for it, wouldn't it,
that
really?
Well, a bit. Slightly. You know.
A smidge.
And I love your reaction. It was like, gutted. And we reward people here for our iTunes rating. And we had some Brothers Cider to give away. A 24-pack of the Palmer Violet Cider, which we all loved.
That is liquid gold.
And this is going to Keegan's Home 3K, who said, you're better than Commode and Empire together. That's amazing. Awesome.
And I hope that was Kevin Keegan.
I hope so. He definitely wants to win some Brothers. Let's give away some awesome new prizes. So as you heard our review just now for Avengers Endgame, we have a Thor, Captain America, Hulk, Nubilus, Stark, Thanos.
Who?
Nubilus?
Her as well. Captain
Mark. Nubilus? We're not going to move until you say a name right.
Nebula.
Nubilus!
We have a Thanos, a Captain Marvel, I'm going to keep going here, a Hawkeye, a War Machine, a Black Widow, and an Ant-Man Funko pack.
Well done.
That is a lot.
Nubilus.
I'll never let that go.
Which brothers directed Endgame? Yeah, is that right?
Yeah.
The Nubilus brothers.
There we go. Also, because our topic, which has just happened, you'll like this one, Gemma.
Go on.
We have a t-shirt for Train to Busan.
Oh, yes.
The baseball style one.
I have that too.
Let's say who directed that.
Very good question.
And their actual topic choice would be The Night Comes for Us, which I mentioned on the Netflix thing. Let's say who directed it. On the Netflix. Let's say who directed it, because they've actually got a t-shirt for that.
Yeah,
so that's how good it is. Richard Sounds have come along and given us a Marshall action speaker. So it's like a Marshall amp, like the guitars. And it's actually got Bluetooth. You can plug in your iPhone or iPod or whatever and listen to our podcast on it, even louder.
Sweet.
Let's make it really good, because it's Marshall. Who's everyone's favourite ever guitarist?
Oh, interesting.
Ooh,
okay.
A bit different. Who would yours be, Ben?
Not remotely appropriate for a movies podcast.
Well, it could be if it's, you know, like someone in the film. I can't think.
No, let it go.
Stop immediately. Yeah.
My instant reaction is to say Steph Carpenter from Deftones, but that could change if I put any thought into it.
Nice.
Oh, I really like Jack White.
Ah, mine's the guitarist who remains unnamed from Corey's Angels.
It's just Angel One.
Yes. Also, brothers have come along and they realise how, you know, popular the cider is at the moment. They're going to give us two crates of it, but you have to follow us on our Instagram and our Twitter and watch out this week for the competition. And finally, let's give away some Office Space Funko Pops for an iTunes rating. Ooh. That seems very fair.
Fair indeed.
The best way to enter our competitions, because sometimes I forget to tell people, is to go on skiptheend.co.uk. And on there's our Twitter, our Facebook, our Instagram and our email. And we'll come back in 2 weeks and announce all the winners then.
It's It's now time for Movie Masturbate, this section of the show where we pick a name out of a pot full of directors and we talk about our favourite film from that particular director. On the last episode, we had a twosome. Ooh. The first in Skip to the End history. It's the Farrelly brothers. They are known for some very funny films. Not the sort of Jane Austen period type films, but no.
Not quite.
No. So we're going to be talking about our favourite films from these directors. So Ben, I want you to go first.
I love the Farrelly brothers, and I would argue that their run of four films from 1994 to 2000 is as good a run as any comedy filmmakers have ever made. Dumb and Dumber, Kingpin, There's Something About Mary, and Me, Myself, and Irene. But for me, the best of the four is Me, Myself, and Irene.
Ooh.
I got it too.
I knew you would. Yes. I knew you would.
Yes.
Every element of this film slays me, from Jim Carrey's Jekyll and Hyde performance as Charlie Bailey Gates and his alter ego Hank, to his three huge black sons who he raises as his own, despite them clearly being the product of an affair, to Charlie picking up the albino hitchhiker named Whitey.
Yes.
Yes.
It's such a gloriously, unapologetically stupid film, as all the best Farrelly Brothers films are, and I'd argue it's the funniest work that Carrey's ever done. He's switching from the kind of sweet-natured Charlie to the complete asshole Hank. It's a thing of beauty because it's not just his words or his way of speaking that changes. It's his whole physicality, the way he holds himself. His face even seems to somehow change. It's almost like a different person. It's an extraordinary, extraordinary stuff.
I think he should have got an Oscar, and I'm being genuinely serious. You find another performance that well.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, he's unbelievable.
He's great.
But from my God, there's so many moments in this film that the moment he's still trying to go along with the fact that he is the dad,
yeah.
He's at a barbecue, and the mate comes over, it's like, he's got an all-year-round tan, and then he's cooking these sausages, he's like, those kids' dicks are bigger than those sausages. And at that point, I'm just literally pissing myself. It's one of the films that I laugh out loud throughout. There's literally little tiny bits that I still can't believe that Renee Zellweger took part in this film, because obviously now we know as Bridget Jones, but back then she's there talking about the dildo, she's talking about him with his cotton mouth and his cotton with water. My favourite moment of the entire film is when we see Milky or Whitey or Casper asleep next to Charlie, and he's basically saying, so where's your family? He's like, I don't have them around anymore. Why? I hacked them all to pieces. The hardest bit was when my sister was there because she was still awake at the time. And he's got this face, and we just see Kerry just looking terrified, like, what the fuck are we gonna do? And then when we get to the point of him like, look, I'm really sorry about what happened, what is your real name? And he just turns around and goes, Casper. It's the stupidest, silliest thing in the world, but I love it, and it's got so much repeat value of watching. I love this film.
There are just so many funny, stupid bits, like when they find what he thinks is a dead cow in the middle of the road.
Oh, God.
But then he tries to shoot the cow, but the cow won't die, so he ends up putting him in a headlock and trying to choke him. Or the bit when he's in the supermarket and he's got the Vagiclean. That's Vagiclean. A little extra cheese on the taco.
It's so, so good. I've enjoyed it watching it. Like, literally, it felt like the first time I watched it. Mm-hmm. It's that good. The soundtrack's phenomenal as well.
Farrelly Brothers soundtracks are always great.
Mm. Yeah.
Always good fun. You mentioned the dildo scene. when Charlie wakes up and he's been in the motel with Renny Zellweger, hasn't he? And he accuses her of using that dildo. And he was like, no, you use that on yourself. And Hank had shoved it up his own ass. Yeah.
Why am I weeing? Like, I've had sex all night. So, so good. And then obviously we get the start of the film is when we see the little fella. That's the correct term. We can't say midget, can we?
No, it's dwarf is the word.
Oh, dwarf. Okay, yes.
And oh my God.
Right. He's the chauffeur. And they're like, would you still love me if you were eating whale blubber again and again? And then when she drives off with him and she's admitting that she's off now, I can't do this anymore, you're left here now, I'm leaving you. She said, but you promised you'd eat whale blubber for the rest of your life. And he turns around and goes, she'll be eating whale blubber just as long as I free Willy. It's such a genius, well-written joke. And I'm just sat there like, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
I'm laughing now like it's the first time I've seen it. It's hilarious.
I was at work last week, and I shouldn't admit this, but I was on the IMDb page for this. There's on each IMDb page, as I'm sure you know, they have a quotes page.
Yeah.
And I was just reading large swathes of text from this film, just dying with laughter at my desk at work, even just reading them without the delivery of the actors. It's so brilliantly written, this film.
I love it.
Stupid and so goddamn funny. It got terrible reviews.
Really?
Yeah. It stands at the minute it's not going to change. It stands at 47 on Rotten Tomatoes and 49 on Metacritic. But the Farrelly brothers, with the exception of Peter and Green Book, prior to that, the Farrellys had never been critical darlings. they make dumb fun movies for dumb fun people.
Yeah, and look how it works. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is living evidence it works.
Yeah.
I will watch them until they never stop making them. Honestly, I love them.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. So I haven't gone for Me, Myself and Irene. But I have gone for one of the films you just mentioned, Kingpin.
Awesome.
Great choice.
So it stars Woody Harrelson as burnout bowler Roy Munson, who sees a chance of mentoring an Amish prodigy to fame and fortune. If you throw in the competition, you know, from the charismatic and sexually inappropriate Big Ern McCracken, played wonderfully by Bill Murray, this is a comedy that I myself will never tire of. And comedy in the mid-90s is so much different to how it is now. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get away with half the stuff that they did back then to what is today. It was all about visual gags, and it was always about over-the-top grossness. You know, how could you outgross a scene that's coming up, you know? And the Farrelly brothers had this down to an art form, but in a good way. But it has so many great and classic moments, like when Roy is milking a bull, for example. Little does he know, he's jizzing him off. But of course,
jizzing him off. Come jizz me off. That's not an expression. I mean, that's not an expression.
It is from now. Yeah. It is today.
Okay.
Try it. Let us know on Twitter.
No, don't. Please don't.
How you got on with your partner.
Please don't.
Ask them to
don't
jizz
do that.
You off.
And certainly no pictures.
Hashtag jizz me off.
Don't. Oh, my. That's a game show getting a name if ever
you know
we have
that
one
of our listeners will actually ask their partner to jizz them off and let us know how they got on.
Slide into our
DMs. You can have a keyring.
Let's move on.
Don't give them prizes.
You get a full line.
Gemma.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay. So basically, some really gross moments there. But the way how he teams up with innocent Ishmael.
Mm-hmm.
He's from a world where there's no technology, there's no booze, there's no sex, there's no drugs, there's no naked, scantily clad women, until he meets Roy Munson. Then he just goes balls to the wall out. And it's an essence of silliness with a surprisingly endearing finish to it, because you want them to win. They're just a lovable band of losers, but you want them to beat Big Ern with his crazy toupee hair and the way he thrusts inappropriately to the crowd. It's just a laugh-out-loud riot. This is by far and above my favourite Bill Murray performance, because I believe he's in it for about 10, 15 minutes, but he steals every single scene that he's in. It's just wonderful. And Bill Murray and the Farrelly brothers make beautiful music together.
It's the one of theirs, or one of their earlier films, that I've seen the least.
Really?
I've seen Me, Myself and Irene, Dumb and Dumber, 20 times each, probably. Whereas I think I've seen Kingpin twice.
Yeah. I've only seen it once, I think.
Really?
It's
an underrated gem.
Yeah.
Woody Harrelson is so good. And he's got real acting chops with comedy. He delivers every single line perfectly. The sight gags he's great at too. It's just a perfect comedy.
Well, that was Woody Harrelson's start, wasn't it? He was in Cheers. He came from a comedy background.
Yeah. Now look at him.
Is he going to be in... Is it original cast for...
Zombieland 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, of course he is. I was worried they might just get some nobodies in.
Is it Tallahassee?
He's also going to be in Venom 2, which I'm less excited about.
Christ.
Let's put all our eggs in the basket for the other one.
Yes. Well, I want to know what social media came up with, because I saw fuckloads.
All sorts.
Ha!
On Twitter, Stuart at From Page to Screen has said, "Easy. Has to be There's Something About Mary by a mile. I've never laughed so much at the cinema."
Oh, it's
so a great film.
Brilliant film. Mm. Absolutely brilliant film.
You're going to talk about There's Something About Mary. Spunk in the hair.
Yep.
Spunk in the hair. She had spunk in the hair.
Mm-hmm.
She must have asked him to jizz me off.
Clearly. On Twitter, The Fourth Dimension at Mike_J_Lord has said, "The Heartbreak Kid is a rather charming Ben Stiller rom-com that nicely updates Neil Simon's 1972 screenplay." It's all right, that one. It's not great.
No.
I've not seen it.
No, I've not done it. Is it about Shawn Michaels' life story?
It is, yes. Starring Ben Stiller as Shawn Michaels.
That I want to see.
Let's see Ben Stiller deliver some sweet chin music.
With his tiny little legs.
Yeah.
They are so tiny.
Wow. I've not seen it, no.
Yeah, it's all right. Gillian Hay on Facebook has said simply, "I love Shallow Hal."
Oh, wow.
So she's the one.
Right. She is the one.
It's all right.
Exactly, all right.
Yeah, it's all right if you like a film that's just relentless fat shaming.
Oh, that's true, actually.
But it's not unfunny.
No.
And Jack Black's good in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me.
As is Gwyneth, to be fair.
Oh, yeah, I forgot it's her.
There we go.
On Twitter, John O'Callaghan at Snoochies has said, "I'll have to go with Kingpin for Bill Murray's hair alone."
Absolutely.
I like the reasoning.
Yeah, it should always be about Bill Murray's hair.
Andrea on Twitter at Lunachick has said, "I love Fever Pitch. Jimmy Fallon is absolutely precious in it."
Wait, is that the remake of Colin Firth's Fever
Correct.
Pitch?
Yeah.
Oh dear.
It's not great. I mean, more power to you, Lunachick, if you dig it, but I think it's cack.
No, not my cup of tea.
And if you think that's bad, wait for this one. Malin 181 at Malin 1811 has said, my favourite film that the Farrelly brothers have worked on is Osmosis Jones. Fair enough, bro.
Wow.
Whatever floats your boat.
Wow.
Darren J. Smith on Facebook hasn't given an explanation, but he said, Stuck on You.
That's all right.
I really like that film.
It's actually a surprisingly sweet film.
Matt Damon, Greg Kinnear.
Yeah.
That's, I really like
it's
that.
It's funny.
One. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, Dave Gill at DavidGill1981 has said, me, myself and Irene, it's just unnecessary nonsense that makes me feel great every time I see it.
Beautifully
said. Couldn't agree more with that. And then finally, Ian Wiltshire at Wiltshire1980 has said, Dumb and Dumber, a perfect comedy film that doesn't get any less funny the older you get. Just give the sequel and a prequel the swerve. They were the drizzling shits.
They were.
You're not wrong, Ian.
No.
Yeah, time to change another pair of pants.
The first one is fantastic. The other two are, indeed, the drizzling shits.
I reckon it'd be my number two.
Dumb and Dumber, yes, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Absolutely awesome.
100%. Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
You know
I do.
What? Always.
Dumb and Dumber won it by one vote.
What? You were second?
Kingpin came second, one vote behind. Yeah, there was a very strong showing for me, myself, and Irene, though. Unsurprisingly, not a single vote for Dumb and Dumber 2.
Likely so.
Didn't expect one. But more surprisingly, not a single vote for Hall Pass, which I really like.
Hall Pass? That's Jenna Fisher and Owen Wilson?
Yeah. Jason Sudeikis.
That's right.
Stephen Merchant. It's a good film. I
like
it. Yeah, it's good fun.
That's weird. They got no votes for that, but a vote for Shallow Hal.
And Osmosis Jones.
Wow. But I like the fact that people are contributing. It's always much appreciated.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Whose turn is it to pick out of the park?
Ooh.
It's yours, isn't
it's
it?
Yours. Is
it?
Oh,
yes.
Marvellous. Yeah. Here we go, then.
Do you want a drum roll?
Nah.
Giving you one.
Next time round, we're going to be masturbating over, stand back from your microphones, people, John Carpenter.
He's jizzed himself.
Five guys, 12 pubs, 50 pints.
60 pints.
Steady on your fucking alky.
Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me.
It's now time for the rewatch, and this time round we've gone for The World's End, and as Ben said at the start of today's episode, it's a film we didn't really love when it first came out.
No.
So I've purely chose it to see if maybe on repeat viewing it changes our opinion, or we still think it's just meh. Five friends who reunite in an attempt to top their epic pub crawl from 20 years earlier become humanity's only hope for survival when the whole town turns to robots. Is this the world's end for them? Find out with our rewatch that's coming up now. So as we said, I want to throw this straight to Ben because I know his thoughts, and then I'm very excited to hear yours, Jem. So Ben, is this still meh, or is it actually pretty decent?
Kind of neither, kind of somewhere in between. I like it more now than I did the first time, for sure. But I like the film as a low-key comedy about a group of middle-aged men trying to grasp onto some part of their youth. But then I'm immediately turned off by the ham-fisted body snatcher sci-fi. I just don't think the two sides of the film work together.
Okay, so Gemma, I don't actually know your thoughts on this film at all. So this is intriguing.
This is a world exclusive.
Yes, this is what everyone's tuned in for. Forget Endgame, this is it.
This is what they want to know. It's okay.
Mm.
When you consider it's part of the same trilogy as Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, it's okay. They're clearly the superior films, but of course I don't want to be matching this film to them two. It's fun. There's a load of little Easter eggs that you can always rewatch upon viewing. It's rewarding as an Edgar Wright fan, but it's just a shame we have such an unlikable character for the majority of the film. But it's okay.
We talked today about how From Dusk Till Dawn changes and Audition.
Mm-hmm.
This film changes tone massively. And for me, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's too much of a tone shift.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't think the payoff's worth it. Those first 45 minutes for me, we get to know the characters. We see this obnoxious Simon Pegg character that still grates at me. And then we get this sci-fi element, and it just doesn't work for me. I don't find it funny.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost interest. And for me, I love Shaun the Dead for being so funny. I love Hot Fuzz for being funny. This film, I don't think I laughed once.
Really?
Exactly what my notes say.
Oh, see, it's disappointing.
I do find it quite funny, but mostly in the first 45 minutes, like you said. The other films in the Cornetto trilogy, they managed to blend their disparate styles seamlessly. So you've got the rom-com and zombie angles in Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
It works. You've got Hot Fuzz blending buddy cop tropes along with a Wicker Man-style mystery horror. And again, it works. But the comedy and the sci-fi just don't blend together. Instead of complementing each other in this film, they just jar against one another.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work for me. And it's a shame. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how it could have been fixed.
Well, I think probably one of the main things that could have been fixed was the character of Gary King.
Mm.
And this is my problem with the film. I love Simon Pegg. I think he's a wonderful actor. He's really funny. He just has this great essence about him. However, Gary King, when you're watching a film, you want to be on side with the protagonist. You want to know what their journey is. You want to see them succeed. But the fact he's just selfish. He's manipulative. He's a liar amongst these four really nice friends that he's got that want to help him out. And it isn't until probably about the last 15 minutes where you start to feel a bit of empathy towards him because of where he comes from.
Mm.
But that's my main gripe about this film. Gary King's a knob.
Yep.
I agree, he is, but I also do think it's a very, very good performance from Simon Pegg. I think he manages to blend the humour of his character and the pathos as well. But I think, you say it's not till the last sort of 15 minutes or whatever that you start to come on sight to him, but I think this is the opposite of what they did in Endgame. You know, I talked about how the emotions were earned there, it didn't feel manipulative.
Mm.
This film, I find, is emotionally manipulative. You only start to care about Gary when he pulls down his sleeves and he's wearing bandages to suggest that he's attempted suicide.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One, I think that's highly inappropriate in a comedy of this type. And two, it's emotionally manipulative.
Yeah.
It's trying to go to us, no, he's not a complete arsehole. Look, he's got problems.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we've got to forgive him then.
Yeah.
And it's too much of a twist at the end. It doesn't work for me at all.
That's it. That's exactly it.
The thing I really hate about it is, for me, Pegg and Frost together are supposed to be best friends for life.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be. I know that when they're not being filmed, you know they're like those two that we saw in Spaced.
Mm-hmm.
You know they're what we saw in Shaun the Dead. In this, because they're not best friends and they haven't got that chemistry, and they're kind of against each other and always at each other's throats, even though they're meant to be best friends. They're just, even Nick Frost's character, I don't warm to. I'm just like, yeah, I can appreciate he wants water. He doesn't want to be one of the boys anymore. But I'm like, I don't want you to be working in an office being boring. I want you to be the person that's getting pissed and chained up as a zombie. I want more of you like that.
You say about, you know, the chemistry that they have. It really bugs me, especially towards the end when he starts being a lot more sympathetic to Gary and almost becomes his sidekick. Because during the duration of the film, he challenges him quite a lot and he's actually at loggerheads with him for the majority. But it isn't until that last 15 minutes and he just becomes this, like, this sidekick that, you know, he's looking up to Gary all of a sudden. It shouldn't be like that. I really like the fact that he was his own person.
Yeah. I think one of the things they tried to do with limited success is they tried to have a role reversal between Pegg and Frost, because in this film, Pegg is the fuck-up and Frost is the straight-laced guy. It's generally the other way around in their films, if you look at Hot Fuzz and to a lesser extent Shaun of the Dead. So they've tried to do something different, and I think it kind of works up to a point. But as you say, then at the end, Nick Frost just becomes the sidekick anyway.
Yeah, yeah, I don't like that, because I really enjoy Nick Frost in this.
Yeah.
So, when the film actually breaks out and we discover this fight scene in the toilet and then we're, oh, they're actual robots and they have this like blue sort of blood and all this. At that point, I'm not invested anymore. I'm already switched off. I don't find it funny. I'm not amused. And for me, the whole second half is like a Tom and Jerry sketch where they're just fighting and fighting and fighting. And it really grated on me. And I want to like it because the cast are amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at this point, I'm so uninvested. But everyone else goes, oh, I love that point. You know, if you look at IMDb, people love this film.
Yeah.
Everyone that loves the early films. And I respect that, you know, that they love this. But I thought it looked shit. All the robots bleeding and this blue sort of blood. It didn't look good for me. I didn't buy into it. I thought it looked shit.
It reminded me of my dolls when I was a kid, when you pull the head and the limbs off, and then you give them a haircut, and then you put them back on. And
see, I don't have an opinion one way or the other. I didn't think it looked crap. I didn't think it looked particularly great. My issue, and you've hinted at it there, Mark, is that it becomes redundant. There are just so many fight scenes.
Yeah.
The amount of times you saw their heads popping off, their arms popping off, their heads getting smashed, it was like, well, I've seen this now.
Yeah.
Have you got anything more to add? That being said, I do think there are some excellent fight scenes, some excellent fight choreography.
Brilliant.
That first fight between the guys and the chavs in the toilet is excellent. excellent. Yeah. And I love the fact that Nick Frost is popping out wrestling moves, man. He's doing elbow drops, back breakers.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. I do like that. But it kind of becomes wearying when you just get another one of these fight scenes 2 minutes later and then another one 2 minutes later.
The whole second half film is just fight scenes. Yeah. That's all it is. But yeah, I can't knock Edgar Wright for that. The direction of those and the choreography, as you said, is flawless. Mm-hmm. He's up there with, like we just said, with the Russo brothers with their fight scenes. Yeah. You know what's going on.
But what I, and it's a trademark that Edgar Wright has delivered throughout his films, the foreshadowing of what's going to happen during the whole of the film right in the introduction. Yeah. And I really like that. I applaud him for that because he is essentially giving you spoilers without you realising mm-hmm. that. And it's also conveyed in the names of the pubs.
Yep. I want to do it one day. I want us three to go. I'd be dead after 12 pints, but yeah. do this. Because it's only in like Stevenage or Hitchin or somewhere like that. It's not far away.
But it's not a real town and the pubs aren't real pubs.
Some of them,
I tell you what, you go and you let us know what happened, yeah?
Some of them are real pubs. So the World's End pub is a real pub that you can go in and have a pint.
One of them's
a railway station. Yeah. It's not, in fact, a pub.
We'll buy some from outside Co-op and we'll have a beer there, a can of Carlin.
The interesting thing for me is that this is the one of the Cornetto trilogy that I like the least, and I think we would all agree on that.
Yes.
But this is the one that feels the most like Spaced to me.
Yeah.
It has that kind of loose, shaggy nature that a lot of the best Spaced adventures do. Do you remember that one where the dog gets kidnapped by the lab and they have to go and rescue the dog?
Yeah.
This film reminds me of that kind of caper.
We need to get our dog back.
Yeah. It kind of feels more like Spaced, which is weird because obviously we all love Spaced.
Yeah.
Even the soundtrack, when you think about it, you've got like old suede, like kind of the old like rave classics from the early 90s.
Stone Roses, all that sort of stuff. You're right.
Yeah.
But House it just doesn't Martins. Have the feel of it.
No,
I don't know.
It's just not as good. I do think they do a good job showing how Gary hasn't moved on from his youth, so things like playing that he's got that tape in his car of our early 90s music. He's still got the same crappy car. He's still wearing the same t-shirt.
Yeah, Sisters of Mercy.
You know, Eddie Marson's character asks him if he needs a pub map, and he pulls out his one, the same one from 20 years earlier. They've done a good job of showing how he's just clinging on to that one night.
Mm. I know, but doesn't that's almost an emotionally stunted person.
Mm.
And I do feel sorry for him for that, but when you realise just how much he's fucked over his friends over the year, even using the emotional blackmail of his mum dying.
Yeah.
It kind of leaves a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. But the chemistry between the friends is fantastic.
But that's how the character's meant to be written, so he's done a brilliant job. Yeah. We're all meant to hate him. Yeah. We're all meant to not like him on screen, so he's done it perfectly. Yeah.
But I also like the chemistry, you know, Eddie Marsden, Paddy Considine, Martin Freeman, Nick Frost. Paddy Considine, I would happily watch more of him in this film because I really liked his character when he all of a sudden realises that he fancies Sam.
And why wouldn't you?
Rosamund Pike.
That's great that they got her in.
Yeah.
The scene that I hate is when Pierce Brosnan turns up. That's the bit
Pierce Brosnan.
When he turns up.
Did he have a nightstick?
That's the moment I'm out and his eyes glow blue like it's at that point I'm like, I'm done. That's the point.
Why didn't that work for you?
Why is he in it?
Well, why not?
I think they've just got a thing about getting ex-James Bonds. What's his name? Roger Dalton, or is it?
Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton. He was in.
He's in Hot Fuzz.
So I think that's what it is. The character that I really love was Eddie Marson's character, Pete. Especially the more drunk he got. I thought he was adorable as a little drunk.
When he's like laughing about the fact that they removed an R in Gary's name, Gay King. Oh, yeah. Face.
Yeah, I thought he was great. Yeah. Going, but you just mentioned there that when Pierce Big Boss Man's face lit up, his eyes blew. All the robots.
Yeah.
They're not robots, they're blanks, whatever they call them. Their eyes glow blue, their mouths glow blue, and they put their hands out when they're attacking. I thought that was a really cool visual, and it kind of reminded me of Attack the Block.
Yes.
It had that same kind of feel to it. So I did.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
But it's also a modern version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers because that's what the people do without, obviously, the illuminated blue lights. So I thought that was quite a cool contemporary tribute to that.
That very final scene where they're in the pub and they're all surrounded by the people. And I'm literally at that point, I'm like, I'm done. I'm sick of this. I just hate it. I hate the ending. I hate it.
See, I think there's a kind of, there's a difference between the idea and the execution. I think the idea of them ending up in this post-apocalyptic world, I think is a great idea, because the easy thing to do would be for everyone just to live happily ever after, everything to go back to normal. They took the difficult choice and went with the post-apocalyptic ending. I like that, but I just think the execution is bad.
Yeah.
Gary going into the pub for a glass of water with a load of his mates, I thought was shit.
Yeah.
They could have executed it better.
Yeah, I just hate it. So there we go.
Wow.
But I did like it more than the first time I watched it.
I don't think you did. It just seems like you hate it more.
It's just so disappointing, isn't it?
I think it's a light bit of fun. You know, it's something that you don't have to heavily invest in. It's something that you can just enjoy for what it is.
Yeah.
So I don't have too much of a problem with it. I just think that it's not as good as Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz. It's not funny. It's, oh God, I'm really ripping it to pieces now. Yeah.
It's not funny. It's a comedy. Yeah. It's not funny.
But it doesn't,
I like it.
But it doesn't make me proper laugh out loud. I'm just like,
yeah. The question is, and it's not one we can answer because we don't have a time machine, is would we like this film if Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead didn't exist? If this was the first film that Pegg and Frost and Wright put out, would we be watching this thinking, yeah, that's pretty damn good? Do we only dislike it because it's not as good as the very high bar they've already set?
That's an excellent point.
And how do we answer? We can't really answer that question.
No.
It's food for thought.
Oh, then pass me a plate. I'm going to the buffet.
Randomly, it's with Fred, isn't it? But what do you guys think of the film Paul?
Nah.
See, that is a good bit of fun. It's not a great film. It's a good bit of fun. And I excuse it because Wright wasn't involved.
Yeah.
So it's not one of his, you know, group of films. It's just Frost and Peg
dicking
about.
I didn't like it at all.
No.
Sorry, not for me.
They get two rewatches scores.
there we go.
Let's score it.
Yeah.
Yep. So, Ben, you go first.
I'm going to give it a generous score. There are bits I like, especially the first third of the film, and I like the ambition. So I'm going to give it a safe 7.
That's fair. Gemma?
It's okay.
You started with this. You've got to elaborate.
I will do. It's okay because it's not sort of genre defining. It's not going to change British comedy the way how the other two films did. But I'm okay with it. I'm happy to watch it again. So it's a 7 out of 10.
I'm going to give it a 6, but I did actually enjoy it more. And Ben commenting on the fight scenes and the choreography is awesome.
Mm.
And it's not that bad. Like you said, it's just followed something that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Shaun the Dead is one of the greatest films ever made. So overall, The World's End gets a skip to the end 7 out of 10, which isn't bad.
Nah.
It's okay.
So stop saying everything, it's okay. What's the next choice of rewatch?
Well, it's my choice for the next episode. So I figured it's time to bring this film because an announcement was made that this particular film is coming to Netflix on the 1st of May. On the next episode, our rewatch is going to be Snowpiercer.
Yes!
Here it is, guys. I don't know about you, but I'm in the mood for a bloody good game show.
Ooh.
It's the third and final round of Flick Me Faster.
So many listeners are jerking off right now.
Okay. So are we ready?
Yes. I'm ready to flick you.
Let's get on with the rules. Yes. Yeah. So the rules are very, very simple. It's going to be a team game. So we've got Ben and Mark, Team Barky Bark.
Heyo.
There it is. Lads. And each team member is going to get 15 well-known movie posters. You're going to get 3 minutes to describe that poster to your teammate. And then they, in return, have to guess the film. You get it right, you get a point.
Mm-hmm.
Simple. And once those 3 minutes are up, and it's time to swap over. So the guesser becomes the guessee, I guess, and describes the movie poster to their teammate again for 3 whole British minutes. Simple as peas, right?
Simple as what now?
Peas.
Simple as peas.
There we go.
Apparently.
Peas are the simplest vegetables in the vegetable world. I just want to throw that out there.
I don't understand what the fuck's going on in your head. And that's me saying that.
But whoa.
Oh.
There's some rules to adhere to.
Oh, God, what's this?
So when you're describing what's in front of you, you can only say what you see.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you can't just say random things from the film.
Oh, it's Ben's favourite film.
Hell no.
Or like a famous scene or a famous element from the film. You can't do that.
That is 101 in the rule book.
Oh, shit.
No actors' names, no character names, no other bodies of work, none of that jizzazz. We don't want any of that. We just want what is on the poster.
Jizzazz!
Jizzazz!
Come and jizzazz me off. This is Jizzcast today.
So, is that perfectly clear for everybody?
I guess.
Yeah. We have to keep playing along like we don't know. We've done 2 rounds of this.
Good.
At the moment, what are the scores? That's all I care
about.
All
right, good. So, on the last episode,
yep.
You and me, Mark,
yep.
Team Gark,
yep.
We got 27 points. So we're in pole position.
But what was the round before that? Because 27 seems very high. Mm.
You know what, Mark? I'm glad you asked. So it was me and Ben, and we were Team Booch, and we got 26 points. So we are flanking the rear. That's what she said.
So at the minute, you're saying that you and Mark are in the lead with 27?
100%, sir, yes.
Incorrect. So I listened to the last episode back, and Gemma, as you just established in the rules there, you can't just say random cool things from the film.
Okay.
Now, when Mark was describing the poster for Drive, he described a few elements of the film, and Gemma, you didn't get it.
Oh.
You didn't get it right until he said he's wearing an amazing jacket with a scorpion on it. Now, I have that poster in front of me. Gemma, can you tell me whether or not you can see a scorpion?
Where's the scorpion?
Yeah, it's because the scorpion, as Mark well knows, is on the back of the jacket, and he's standing facing forward. You cannot see the scorpion, so Mark just said something cool from the film.
Oh my God, you know what? I hate a rule breaker.
So I'm going to have to deduct a point, I'm afraid.
Well, we're supposed to be working as a team today.
Yeah, but I wasn't your team partner last week, mate.
I know, but I'm going to fucking shaft you now on this one.
Well, then you're shafting yourself.
I believe, and I'm not just saying this, that at the time when we did the quiz, Gemma genuinely showed me the poster for the film from like a different version.
I'm holding my iPad picture. It
I
hasn't changed.
It's there,
still all there.
Mate.
You can flick all the other ones. They're still there.
Thank you, bloody.
you just said the scorpion bit. You picked a cool thing from the film, so you don't deserve the point. I'm afraid you scored 26.
All right.
I feel this is about to get very ugly.
But that makes it even better listening for the fans out there.
Exactly.
So I'm fine with that because the fans come first.
Surely FM, where the listener comes first.
Wow. I was not expecting that. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, talk about a plot twist.
Well, Mark, you should have been expecting it because you're such a big cheating bastard.
What about the guy who looks like he's trapped in time? You know, that was
my God. I think it goes without saying, don't cheat.
Yes.
But we've got a third round and I think we should play. Who wants to go first?
Ben, do you want to go first as you've just shafted me?
Yeah, can do.
Yeah, why not?
Here we go. So your time starts now.
There's a guy, he is sitting on a bed, he's wearing what appears to be a kimono. He doesn't look like a chap who would normally wear a kimono. He doesn't look like he's from that country. What country do people who wear kimonos come from?
I have no idea.
Oh my God.
I don't know what a kimono is.
You fucking idiot. It's a guy who's on his own in a hotel room. He doesn't look happy to be there.
Lost in Translation.
Correct, yeah. There's a guy, he appears to be a singer. He's on a stage, what appears to be a big venue. He's very, you know, it looks like he's wearing fashions from maybe the 70s, 80s. He's...
Walk the Line.
He's belting out a song. It's a big venue. Looks, I would say it's probably Wembley.
Wow. Bohemian Rhapsody.
Correct. This is a cop and he's riding a pig.
Filth.
Correct. This is a little lad in a yellow poncho holding a red balloon.
It.
Correct. This is an animated film with a spaceman and a cowboy.
Toy Story.
Correct. This is a big bloody boat with two lovers hovering
Titanic.
Above the boat. Correct. This is a guy who appears to be a sportsman. I can't say what type of sport he would be playing because it'd give away the name of the film. He's clearly in a ring.
Rocky.
No.
Raging Bull.
The name of the film would give away the sport that he is doing.
Something about boxing then. Wrestler.
The wrestler, correct.
Fucking hell,
well
sorry.
Done, well done.
This is a spaceman who is standing on, it's kind of like a weird psychedelic background. It's just one spaceman with his helmet.
Jesus.
No, not Jesus.
Oh my God. First Man?
No. I'm going to pass on this one.
Okay.
It's just too tough to get that one. It's a black background with a big red and yellow star. And within the star, it's all the faces of all the different characters from the film. They're all wearing 70s fashions.
Boogie Nights.
Correct. This is a man who is wearing... He's kind of like a superhero. He's wearing a red jacket and a big gold helmet. He's shooting into the sky.
Super.
He's got like a pack on his back that's bursting him into the sky.
Come back to it.
Okay. This has got a spectre. So think of another word for a spectre. And he's in a red circle with a line through it.
Jeez, I don't even know what a spectre is.
You are a moron. I don't know why I bother with you. An apparition, a ghoul.
I'll come back to it.
What's a ghoul? Another word for a
Ghostbusters.
Ghoul? Ghostbusters.
Oh,
Jesus God.
God.
This one, it's a camouflage helmet, and it's got some bullets stuck in the back of the helmet, and that's all that's on the thing.
Give me a second. It's not Platoon. It could be Full Metal Jacket.
Correct.
Well done.
This is a bunch of kids who are wearing 80s fashions. They're dangling from some stalactites in a cavern.
Lost Boys.
No.
Gremlins, Goonies.
Goonies, correct. Well, yeah. This is two dudes in very cool dark suits wearing sunglasses.
Blues Brothers.
No.
Men in Black.
Correct. This is, it's three heads. You can see the head of the main character and the two follow-up characters. They're all superheroes or supervillains. One of them is wearing a black cowl.
Batman Returns.
It is Batman Returns.
He's got it. That was the last one as well.
Okay,
well
not
done.
Too bad.
Yeah.
So,
I'll be honest, it's harder than when we did it with these posters. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Would you like to know which ones you passed on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's getting tough now because we used up most of the good
Some
ones.
Some of those posters, Jesus.
Okay, so the spaceman with the circles behind him was Moon.
Oh,
that's really tough. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
You also had a man in a gold helmet with a red suit on, the Rocketeer.
You would never get that in a million years.
That's so tough.
You got 13.
That's not bad.
Excellent work.
Well done.
It's fucking hard now. But some of those posters, I was like, what?
Mark, are you ready?
Give me a minute. I just need to get my breath. It's tense.
And away we go.
There's a woman in a white dress at the forefront, but she's being watched over by a guy in a suit. In the background, there's a guy with a gun, and they're somewhere in America. So she's got long blonde hair. She's looking seductively into the camera, but there's a guy.
LA Confidential.
Perfect. There's a guy playing drums. That's the main focus.
I know exactly what it is, but I can't remember the word. Whiplash.
Perfect. Yay. There's a black and white hand holding a girl's hand that's in a red iconic coat.
Iconic.
Iconic. Coat. Schindler's List.
Brilliant. There's a very iconic statue from New York, but it's crumbling, so something must have exploded, it looks like.
Cloverfield.
Perfect.
Well done.
There's a group of kids that look very 80s and very iconic.
Oh my God!
And they're just sat there looking cool, and it's just a group shot of the five of them.
It's not the Goonies, because we've just had that. No. Stand By Me.
No.
Breakfast Club.
Yes. Good work. There's a group of children that have been at school with their teacher in a black and white shot, very black and white, but the writing of the film title's in red with the big logo in the background of the two letters for the film title. So there's kids at school. They might not be from England, they could be from Japan or China.
Battle Royale.
Perfect. There's two people lying on a sheet of ice, but there's a crack in the ice. They look really loved up, but he's kind of looking like
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Perfect. There's a red iconic poster.
Very iconic.
Oh my God.
And he's walking through the streets of London, isolated, all on his own. There's no one else around. He's completely all on his own.
28 days later.
Perfect. There's a guy standing in front of a car that charges for people to take people to different destinations. I'm not allowed to say the title of it because it's also in the film.
Taxi Driver.
Perfect. There is a big creature and a little creature, and the little creature only has one eye.
Monsters, Inc.
Yes. There's a woman in a yellow iconic suit with a big sword.
Kill Bill.
Correct. There's a guy who's playing golf and looking very...
Happy Gilmore.
Very good. There's a person who looks mad putting an axe through a bloody door. Really bad.
Here's Johnny, The Shining.
It's very good. A desert, and there's a Polaroid of the two women that are driving the car looking very happy, but they're just going out to the desert. So it's a really...
Thelma and Louise.
Correct. Oh, there's God, a guy who's in a suit with a bow tie looking very mysterious, very like, oh, he's like, he must work for the mafia, I think. He's got a red
the
rose.
The Godfather.
Yes, and we've done it. Drop the mic.
Well, bloody done.
Yes.
Well done, Mark. Well done.
Yes.
Wowzers. Pajowzers. So, that's the first time that's ever happened. Yes. Some might say that was really iconic.
It was iconic. It was iconic.
Doesn't it work, though, saying iconic? Kids at school, iconic, you know.
Oh, they'll all be saying that by Monday morning. So, that brings me to announce that you guys, Team Barky Bark, 28 points. You are the winners.
That is amazing.
Ooh, champion.
That feels good.
Well done. Well bloody done.
Thank you.
So, yeah, champions are Flick Me Faster.
I like retaining the belt, but now I have to share it with you because we've only got one. So we've won as a team. So
yeah.
Our next photo will be of us together holding it.
Indeed.
Which is nice.
We've earned it.
We've done well.
We deserve it.
Well, I'd say Ben deserves it more than you, Mark.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know about that.
It's a team
game. It's a team effort, mate.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I would not have got them right without such excellent descriptions of those iconic posters.
That's true.
It was a team game.
Remember, you know what a kimono is.
So should we come back with a brand new game? Should that
come
one we've
on.
Definitely got?
Yeah, for sure. Defo.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. Simple as that.
As peas.
Simple as peas.
I'm sick of that saying.
Because it isn't a saying,
Mark. Yeah, that was a famous saying. Yeah. Grandad, will you stop going on about things being as simple as peas?
Oh, he never did stop, did he? Always on about simple as peas.
When we buried him, we put a bag of peas in with him because he always said it.
It's the right thing to do. It's what he would have wanted.
At least now he's at peace. Thank you.
And on that note, Mark, what have you got?
A TV show called Sally Forever.
Amazing. Okay. I've watched this. I've
have
seen
you really?
It. Of course I have, yeah.
What's great. This about? I have not.
It's about 7 episodes, about half an hour each, and it's written and directed by the absolutely incredible Julia Davis from Nighty Night.
Yeah. I am in.
That's
already.
All you need to know. Did Brilliant. You watch Camping as well?
Yes, I did.
Imagine those, but add in a bit more of like The Office with Peep Show and extras. It's the most filthiest, dirty, raunchy, degrading, dark humour you would expect from the thoughts and brain process of Nighty Night, which is fucked up.
This is even darker than Nighty Night.
This is very,
it's
very messed up.
Nighty Night is a masterpiece.
It's all on Sky Atlantic, or for the US listeners, it's on HBO, but it's all there ready for you right now. 7 episodes, you'll get through them in a day. She plays this character called Emma that's just absolutely messed up. I'll credit her all day, but she's the exact same character in everything. She's filthy. She has this portrayal of a woman who's having a midlife crisis, and she gets with this other woman who's quite happily married, but having a boring life, or about to be married. She's a very sort of vanilla woman. She comes
mousy.
Into her. Yes, mousy is the word. And she's actually about to marry a character who's played by Alex McQueen, who I love from In Between Us.
And we met him.
We did.
We met him at a Comic Con.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he's great in this. He's so boring and just the same thing every day. This woman enters the life and just screws everything up. And honestly, some of the sex scenes that they have as lesbians is absolutely mental. Like, there's one scene where they're going down each other and she has to take out with her teeth the used tampon.
Oh my Lord.
And that's not it. That's the nice stuff I can say on air. It's absolutely dark as hell. It's like Jam, Brass Eye. It's mental.
What about the scene where she's on set of the film that they're making and she's in the like the trailer and she's sucking the guy off?
Are you okay?
I just... do you want to tell Jim what the guy does?
Then he shits on her.
It's fucking mental.
I'm so glad you've seen it. I was kind of hoping you hadn't, so I could bring this and then you could go away and watch it. It's the darkest, filthiest. You know when there's boundaries, and usually I break them. I feel that she's the female me, but doesn't even think about there's a boundary.
The female you wish. That.
I wish, yeah. She looks great for her age. She had a lot of plastic done, but...
What?
Allegedly. I don't
allegedly.
Know. Maybe
but,
not.
Oh. If you like Nighty Night, it's an extension of that.
I am
it's
in.
Gross and dark and fucked up.
Yes!
But very funny.
Oh, I'm sure.
I watched it, I think, in one night.
Yeah,
so half an hour each.
I blitzed it in a day as well. Loads of cool people pop up in it. Lena Headey from Game of Thrones is in it.
No,
she pops up in an episode. Yeah.
Julian Barrett.
Yeah, Julian Barrett from The Mighty Boosh.
Yeah, some great people.
Who was, I think, Julia Davis's real life husband.
Oh.
I believe. Yeah.
Which one's that? Mr. Davis.
Howard Moon from, from The Mighty Boosh.
Yeah, that is Julian Barrett.
Yeah,
you're an
idiot. What's your question then?
I don't know.
Who's Julia Davis?
I said Julian Barrett is her real life husband.
Oh,
and then I said, who's that?
What the fuck is she on?
She's just
200 peas.
Go and have your peas and piss off.
I didn't listen.
Honestly, anyone out there, you will be offended. So don't, you know, start tweeting in saying I've upset you, or you're watching it with your nan and she didn't like the fact that someone's getting sucked off.
Dude, no one's ever going to say that to us.
Yeah, it's brilliant. You've got to watch it. And it's available now on the box sets on Sky. So good.
I was going to bring it as a recommend maybe a month or two ago, and I don't know why I didn't. I think something else came in front of it, but it's great.
And then go and watch Nighty Night.
Yes, if you haven't seen 99, for the love of God, go and watch that.
Amazing.
Duh.
Gemma.
So, I've gone for a music video.
Ooh.
A music video?
A music video, yes.
Lazy, only about 4 minutes long.
Yeah.
Put some effort in next
Says
time.
This is the guy who, like, watches half-hour episodes.
Oh, he watched a seven-episode series there.
That's 3.5 hours. Yeah.
So I've gone for a music video, and it's by FKA Twigs. The song is called Cellophane, and she's a British singer who's been nominated for the Mercury Music Prize for her album LP1, and she hasn't really done any work for about 3 years now, but she's come back, and she specialises in an edgy, contemporary kind of R&B style with a bit of an electro twist. And this video, it's directed by Andrew Thomas Huang, and he's well known for directing some of Bjork's videos, so that gives you a bit of an indicator as to what Cellophane is going to be like.
It's going to be weird.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The only way I can describe this, if it was a film, I would say it's the anime version of Ghost in the Shell, but in a live-action sense. So it's definitely not the Scarlett Johansson one, which was shit.
Right.
So it's very futuristic, has a lot of cyber sort of elements to it, but the way how it starts, it's so elegant, and it's awash with these golden colours, and FKA Twigs comes out and does this beautiful dance on a pole. And from there, it kind of escalates into this weird futuristic kind of melding of colours and cinematography, and it's just breathtaking. The song itself is really minimalistic, so it adds that extra dimension to this futuristic video. It's beautiful. It's a work of art, and FKA Twigs is quite an edgy artist anyway, so her teaming up with Andrew Thomas Huang is music. It's absolutely beautiful.
See, I'm not familiar with her music. It's not my cup of tea, but I've seen her. I've seen what she looks like, and she does seem kind of edgy and kind of cool. So I was like, oh, yeah, she seems pretty rad. And then I read that she was going out with Shia LaBeouf.
It was Robert Pattinson previously.
Oh, Lord.
Jesus.
Both of them.
Imagine stirring his porridge. Jesus. Do you know what I mean?
I've not heard that phrase in a while.
But yeah,
I've never heard that phrase.
Look it up, Google it.
But what I was going to say is it's nice and refreshing to hear that people are still putting effort into making music videos.
Exactly.
Because back in the day when you'd watch MTV2 and see stuff like Tonight by the Smashing Pumpkins.
Great video.
Which is absolutely unbelievable. And Slipknot and all these great bands like Korn, which we always talk about.
Yeah, man.
Music videos nowadays just to seem to be a band playing in a garage because they don't want to waste much money on a
exactly.
video.
Exactly. There's no value in paying a lot of money for a good video.
Well, music videos tend to be more about showing one's wealth in acquiring downloads and fans. It's not about the message of the song anymore. Whereas this is why it really sort of stopped me in my tracks. It was something completely different and something that isn't seen in today's artists. It's mind-blowing how beautiful this video is.
This is not a recommendation. Well, it is a recommendation. It's not my official one, but just while we're talking about music, did you see that the Wu-Tang Clan performed on Jimmy Fallon this week?
Yeah.
The original lineup.
No way. Yeah.
Sans old dirty bastard because he's dead, but his son, who goes by the moniker Young Dirty Bastard, did his parts.
It was amazing.
Absolutely amazing,
absolutely,
man.
Absolutely cool.
Wu-Tang's still
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wu-Tang worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So Ben, what have you got for us this time?
Well, I've stuck with our theme of Asian. So we talked about Asian movies earlier, and I'm going with the manga of Akira.
Oh.
So it's written and illustrated by Katsuhiro Otomo, and it ran from 1982 to 1990. He would then also go on to write and direct the legendary film based on the manga. And I've been meaning to read the manga for years. I don't know why I haven't. Well, I do know why I haven't. It's because it's six really big fucking volumes and I could never find the time to dedicate myself to it before now. It differs quite a bit from the film. The film is a relatively straightforward cyberpunk drama, but the manga is actually quite funny at times. It contains elements of teen comedy, but it also has an almost Mad Max-esque apocalyptic second half. It's really very good. And Kanada in the film, he's quite composed and this cool leader, but in the manga he's more of a petulant little prick. He's a kid. And he's not the lead character in the manga either. It's more of an ensemble piece, and Kanada is absent for quite large stretches of the manga. There's a much more detailed storyline about the anti-government resistance, which is only briefly touched upon in the film. But the biggest difference is that Akira never actually appears in physical form in the film. You just see him as kind of eyes and stuff in the jar, right. Don't you?
Yep.
Whereas in the manga, you actually see him quite a bit as an important character. And he's this emotionless and easily manipulated godlike figure. The dialogue in the book, in the manga, is quite sparse. There's not a lot of dialogue, but the art is so beautifully rendered. The level of detail is staggering. You end up looking at a page twice as long as you normally would because you're looking at everything that's going on behind the characters, as it were. It's beautiful, beautiful to read. Now, the American Akira movie apparently is in the works, isn't it? We've heard some stuff about this recently.
It's been ages, isn't it?
Yeah, but apparently it looks like it's a go. It's going to be produced by Leonardo DiCaprio and supposedly directed by Taika Waititi, which is
nice,
a damn good start. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that rather than just copying the anime, they go back to the roots, go back to the manga, and introduce some of the elements that are in the books that aren't in the film. Because the anime really only tells the first half and then the ending of the manga. Most of the second half, showing life in Neo Tokyo after Tetsuo destroys it, is eliminated from the film. So I'd like to see them bring that back into the American one. There's also a character in the manga called Chiyoko, who is this badass warrior woman, and she's not in the anime, so I'd like to see her brought into the film. There's a lot to work from. It's a really great read. Anyone who likes the anime, please go out and find the manga and read it, and I implore DiCaprio and Waititi to get involved in it too. But it's great stuff. Great
I'm
stuff.
Really intrigued to read this because yeah. I love Akira and mm-hmm. I love manga and yeah, I'm down.
I'll never read it until the day I die. I won't, because at least that's a promise.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But I'd rather you say that rather than say, "Oh yeah, I'll read it by next week," and then you
exactly.
never do.
Exactly. So yeah. I'm never. I will make this. I will make sure I never ever read.
The
it.
Thing is, you don't need to say that because it's fucking obvious.
yeah, exactly.
We know you won't.
But I'm very intrigued that they've got the names that have you've announced today. You know, people like Leonardo DiCaprio. That's good sign so far.
Yeah.
And Taika Waititi.
You hope it's in good hands.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it's iconic.
You can only hope.
Well, I wouldn't bank on it.
Many people will want to jizz off to it.
That's true. As long as they can rest in peas or whatever it was. What was the fucking saying?
Yeah. What is the saying about peas?
Easiest peas.
Easiest peas.
Simple as peas.
Simple as peas.
Simple as peas.
There we go.
Good God almighty. Do you want to know what's social media?
Always.
Help us.
Please.
On Twitter, Simon Armstrong, at Gunnar Armstrong. Gunnar, I assume, is an Arsenal fan.
Unfortunately.
As we're recording this, they've just been absolutely whomped by Leicester, which brings great joy to my heart.
Whomped!
Anywho, Gunnar Armstrong, he's gone with Bosch Season 5 on Amazon Prime, and he said it's probably the best series on TV right now.
Big words.
Whoa. It is big words. I don't know if I'd go that far, but I bloody love Bosch.
I've not seen it.
It's a fantastic show. It's an old school cop show. Like, the character of Harry Bosch, he's like Dirty Harry. He's a slightly less fascist Dirty Harry.
That's always
real,
good.
Real old school cop show. It's brilliantly made. And quite wonderfully, when Simon Armstrong put this tweet out, the star of the show, Bosch, played by Titus Welliver, who Lost fans will know as the Man in Black, he then liked the tweet. And when Mark replied to Simon, he liked our tweet as well.
There you go. So, we're getting quite a lot of people now liking and
So Titus, if you're listening,
there you
we
go.
Like you, mate.
Yeah. What's up?
Ben Edwards, aka Doc88101 on Instagram, has said, "Finally read And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie, and it's by far the best murder mystery ever written."
The BBC did a series of this a few years ago, and it's one of the best BBC adaptations of Agatha Christie's work. It's brilliant. The story is fantastic.
I didn't see the show, but the book is very, very good.
Yeah.
Do either of you know what the original title of that book was?
Oh, I remember. I've just forgot.
Is it something racist?
It's something incredibly racist. Oh. I'm not going to say what it is, but go ahead and Google it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Hang on.
No, not now, you idiot.
Off air.
Simple as peas.
Can't get the help, can you? No. Jesus Christ. On Twitter, Alex at meta_content has said, "Anna and the Apocalypse. It's a zombie musical with heart, and it's filthy in places. So, so good."
Nice.
Have either of you seen it?
I've heard of it, but I've not seen it.
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm never going to watch a zombie musical, but I've heard good things.
It's like the two things you hate about films.
Well, it's one thing I hate and one thing I don't give a shit about.
I'll
leave you to decide which one is which.
Yes.
On Facebook, Keith Manning has set a YouTube channel called Good Bad Flicks, where the creator picks an underappreciated movie and summarizes it. He goes into great detail on the production and the issues they faced. Sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, that's probably easy to watch as well.
Nice.
Yeah, I bet, yeah. Our old mate Darren Wolf on Twitter, at It's Harry Houdini, which is a genius name, Darren.
Very good.
I absolutely love that. He says, "Forget the news. The best way to keep up with current politics is by watching Frankie Boyle's New World Order. Smart discussions plus sarcasm and C-bombs."
It's brilliant. It's absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I watched one a few weeks ago and I've been watching it since. It's so clever and he's so on the money about so many certain points.
Yeah.
He doesn't care, does he?
No.
Rightfully so.
Like, doesn't give
rightfully
two flying
so.
Fucks.
He's rich enough not to.
Yeah. Good on him.
On Facebook, Lee Boardman has said, "Currently working through Black Summer on Netflix. After giving up on The Walking Dead a few seasons ago, this has reignited my love for zombie shows." Now, Gemma, when I read this, I thought that's right up Gemma's street. Have you started watching this yet?
It's on my list. I've not started watching it, but I am going to in the week.
How about you, Mark?
No, and I'm glad that he's given up on The Walking Dead, because I actually don't know anyone now in the whole world that watches it.
No,
I gave up.
I gave up after season 4, I think. Maybe even season 3. It was just cyclical storytelling. It was the same shit. They'd find a new haven, then they'd be happy for a while, and then either there'd be a zombie invasion or a new enemy would turn up and kill half of them. Then they'd leave, they'd walk to a new haven, then they'd be happy, then zombies would turn up or a new enemy. And it was just that over and over and over every year. Mm. Boring.
Yeah, I'm
tired.
Absolute wank. Amanda White on Twitter, at SuperWhite13, has said, "The Book With No Name by Anonymous. It's the first book in the Bourbon Kids series. It has vampires, wolves, and Elvis."
That sounds incredible.
It's an odd combo.
How would you search for that on Google? Or Amazon?
Simple.
Yeah,
vampires, werewolves, and Elvis.
No, the first part, the actual gender.
You'd type in the words, "The Book With No Name by Anonymous," and it would bring it up. I don't know what your question is.
It just is a bit random, isn't it? It's a bit hard to find. Going to Waterstones, have you got that book by Anonymous? Piss off, you time waster.
Sorry, Gemma, no. Gemma, what did he just say? By who?
Anonymous. I'm giving up. I might go home. Do the outro without me.
Oh God, I'm good. Oh,
this is too much.
Let's move on.
I am as simple as peas.
You are.
Yes.
You really are. Yes. That's fine. We now know what that sentence means.
Yes.
You are as simple as a bag of marrow fat peas.
At least I'm not just the normal. Brilliant.
Good God. On Instagram, Sam Moron, aka Sam Moron 33, has said Line of Duty on BBC One Sunday nights. Definitely the best British TV in a long time. Incredible writing and stellar acting. So many twists and turns that keep you hooked throughout the series.
I'm watching it weekly. I'm up to date. But yeah, the frustrating thing is everything ends on a cliffhanger and then I have to go to work the next day and everyone on my banker desk watches it. So unless I watch it the next day, they're not like, oh, I know you haven't seen it, but I won't ruin it. But you know when John died, I'm like, cheers. That ruins it. So I have to watch it now.
It's the same thing with Game of Thrones. You can't wait and binge. You've got to watch it because people will spoil it.
On the night too. Yeah. You have to.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've not watched Line of Duty yet. Everyone says it's great.
It's very good.
I'm going to wait till the end of this particular series and then I'm going to binge all the series.
Perfect.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Sounds like they just leave you dangling at the end.
Always.
Juicy danglers. Replicant H-146 at Harley Mumford has said Sherlock Holmes, the definitive collection, narrated by Stephen Fry on Audible. Fry brings to life all the characters and stories that are clearly near and dear to his heart.
Oh.
I've never been a big Sherlock guy, but me I do neither. Love things narrated by Stephen Fry, so yeah. I probably would listen to that, to
he
be fair.
He could read like the back of a shampoo bottle and I'd be like, yes, every single word, Stephen.
I do love his voice.
And then finally, Andrew Donlan at Hey Cactus has said, Stay Free, the story of The Clash. It was an amazing Spotify documentary about a very cool band. But turn the call up to 11, he says, because it's narrated by the awesome Chuck D. I could listen to this dude read a phone book.
It's The Clash, and it's Chuck D, and it's on Spotify.
Yeah.
I'm on it.
Chuck D is so famous.
And do you want to hear something cool?
Always.
So we talked earlier about Bosch when Titus Welliver liked Gunnar Armstrong's tweet. Chuck D actually replied to Andrew Donlan. Chuck D of Public Enemy fame. He said, Thanks, Andrew. I feel the same way about Method Man and Red Man. Those dudes are so distinct.
Yes.
So it's kind of a tangential, weird comment to make. But nonetheless, he replied to it, which is really,
really,
very cool.
But Chuck D, there's a lot of truth about what he tweeted there. So it's very true.
Absolutely.
All of them are jumping on our bandwagon now, aren't they?
Time.
Chuck D wants a part of Skip to the E.
What?
Skip to the E. I'm just trying to make it cool.
Oh my
God. Was that you attempting to rap?
No, I can't do that today. Stay tuned for my rap podcast.
No.
Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch are back.
Gee, I think we're not drunk, are we? It just seems a bit mad
in here
today.
It's just one of those days,
isn't
it? Right?
So.
Please keep sending your recommendations in on Twitter at STTE Podcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or old school email podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. By God, I'm tired.
I'm exhausted.
Has this been longer than the actual film Endgame? It feels a long one.
It's taken it out of me, that one, and it's got really daft towards the end.
Yes.
But I like that.
We started well.
It's a good bit of fun, isn't it?
Yeah,
always.
It is.
Yeah. Shall we tell them what's coming up on the next episode?
Oh my God. You know what our main review is?
What?
Follow Endgame.
Yeah?
Detective Pikachu.
Yeah!
Do you think Ben had any influence in deciding
Not
this?
Not at all. No. 100% zero input there.
I am genuinely super excited by all of this. And,
yep.
And the early word is it's pretty bloody good.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun at the very least.
It
I can't
is
wait.
Be fun.
So the real review that matters is ours, so stay tuned for that. Gemma, what is our rewatch?
Oh, wow. It's a big one. It's Snowpiercer.
Oh, that's mad.
A film that only a handful of people have seen, but not the vast majority of them.
Yeah.
And with Netflix help, it's going to happen now. So we're really looking forward to hearing your thoughts when you watch it with us.
Because we've talked about it on and off quite a lot over the years, but we've never been properly able to do it because you couldn't buy it locally on DVD or Blu-ray. None of the streaming services had it for a few years. Now, finally, it's back and people can join us.
And I think it's the right time to bring it.
The amount of people that have been tweeting us, tagging us in lately, saying, have you seen the announcements? Like, we made it happen.
We
rung Netflix. We've got fans that want to watch it. We sort it out for you.
That's what we do. That's
and
what we do.
And we're going to be talking about it on the next episode.
I can't wait.
We're also going to have a bit of a fun topic. This was kind of in aid of the fact that Game of Thrones is back. So we're watching a bit of fantasy TV at the minute. So I thought, wait a minute, we've not done fantasy movies.
Yeah.
So that's our topic next time round. Top three fantasy movies.
Am I allowed to bring Debbie Does Dallas? Because I used to fantasize over that.
If that is your fantasy.
Yes. Two women, they're sisters.
I'm just watching.
Yeah. It's not often I say this, but can I hear more from Ben? Masturbate. There we go.
Well, that flows. It did flow.
Got it out there.
Perfect segue.
Do you know who it's over? It's a big one.
Go on.
The horror master himself, John Carpenter. That's mad.
This is going to be so tough for you, dude. I know how much you love this dude.
Oh, it's going to be intense. And everyone knows I love The Thing, but I don't know if it's my favourite. I'm not sure. It's different days for different movies.
Well, this is it. Off air, you were going like, I don't know which one am I going to go for. A, B, C, D.
I just don't know.
Different drinks for different needs.
I can't wait. What else have we got on?
We'll also give you our pop culture recommendations of the week, and we're going to give away a ton of prizes. Speaking of prizes, I've got a feeling we might have a little something that we didn't get earlier.
Oh my God, are we winners?
Good friends at Last Exit to Nowhere have given us some new t-shirts.
Yay!
So I've got this Jurassic Park one.
Very cool.
Wow.
Gemma, they've sent this one for you.
Ah, it's The Fifth Element.
We should do that as a rewatch. I know this is
It's on my list, dude.
And Ben.
Yeah. I've got a Sopranos t-shirt with the logo for Satriali's Pork Store. Love it.
We should start a TV podcast and do it all on Sopranos. Yeah. That would be unreal.
That's the dream.
But yes, we'll wear them soon for the photos that go out on social media.
Yeah.
And if I wanted to go on social media, I'd visit skipsthend.co.uk and all the links are on there.
That's correct.
Good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm tired, guys, now.
Mate, I'm fucked.
I want a nap.
I need to go. Yeah. I need to go.
For God's sake. See you in 2 weeks. So high.